Lying at my feet. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 23rd, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern until midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and the access code is 449-389-POUND. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 4, verses 21 through 34. And he, Jesus, said unto them, Is a candle brought to be put under a bushel or under a bed, and not to be set on a candlestick? For there is nothing hid which shall not be manifested, neither was there anything kept secret, but that it should come to abroad. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. And he said unto them, Take heed what ye hear, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you. And unto you that hear shall more be given. For he that hath, to him shall be given, and he that hath not, from him shall be taken, even that which he hath. And he said, So is the kingdom of God, as if a man should cast seed into the ground, and should sleep, and rise night and day, and the seed should spring, and grow up, and knoweth not how. For the earth bringeth forth fruit of herself, first the blade, then the ear, after that the full corn in the ear. But when the fruit is brought forth, immediately he put it in the sickle, because the harvest is come. And he said, Whereunto shall we liken the kingdom of God? Or with what comparison shall we compare it? It is like a grain of mustard seed, which when it is sown in the earth is less than all the seeds that be in the earth. But when it is sown, it groweth up and becometh greater than all the herbs, and shooteth out great branches, so that the fowls of the air may lodge under the shadow of it. And with many such parables spake he the word unto them, as they were able to hear it. But without a parable spake he not unto them. And when they were alone, he expounded all things to his disciples. That was Matthew chapter 4, verses 21 through 34. Okay, tonight's program, we're going to look at a writ mandamus. Now, this writ mandamus is really a follow-up on our paper that we filed last week, which we filed on September 16th, and that was on fake law and fake courts. After thinking about that, I wrote another paper. It's a writ mandamus. It has a lot to do with that paper that we did last week. Really looks a little closer and a little more detailed of what took place. And if anybody wants to follow along with that, you can go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight the grand jury on the blue bar, far right side, come down one level and click on Action Against the Judiciary. You'll find it kind of toward the top of the page. It's a couple inches down. And there's 5 papers that we filed. The fifth paper on the 23rd, September 23rd, is the paper we're going to look at today. It's a short paper. It's only 4 pages. And just let me go through real quickly the papers that we've recently filed. On August 17, 2019, we filed a decision and order and a declaration to restore the law. On September 3rd, we filed another decision and order concerning merging equity and law together. On September 9th, we filed another indictment against Judge Kahn for threatening to throw our papers away if we didn't come down and pick them up. And so we sent a paper to also to the to the clerk. I don't think we have that up here, but I'll see if I can get that paper up here. It's an, or maybe on the indictment page itself, it may show. I'll have to take a look. But if it's not on one of these papers, which would have been a letter to the clerk, could have been on any of these papers on the front, but if not, I'll put it up here. Then on the 16th, we filed a paper, Fake Law and Fake Courts. And today, we didn't get it out yet. We'll probably get it out tomorrow, this writ mandamus that we're going to read tonight. Again, four pages, and you get a copy up on our website. Real quick, you know, what has taken place very specifically with this Rules Enabling Act in 1934 was really a coup against this nation, against the United States of America. I just want to really briefly go through some dates we've looked at in the past, but these are some key dates, and I've given them phases. Phase one took place in 1965, the 13th Amendment, and 1968, the 14th Amendment, which really started to set the stage for our rights to be turned to civil rights. 13, of course, was in order to get rid of the rejection of our founding fathers of bar attorneys, particularly English bar, British bar. America, you know, we have our own bar now. That was, matter of fact, that's phase two. In 1871, we have the Organic Act of 1871, where a foreign state, within a city, was created. 1878, just 7 years later, 75 lawyers established the ABA. And without the 13th Amendment, but it's kind of, I don't know that the 13th Amendment really could have prevented the infiltration by the American bar into the United States government because of a different approach. Even though bar attorneys are called esquires, it doesn't have the same ring or the same effect that it had back when our founding fathers were battling for liberty and creating this nation. But the key thing is that there is a conspiracy, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that when we read this paper, to be a little more specific on how this was taught. And it was the American Bar Association who has been teaching civil law in place of common law. So anyway, the next step, phase three, was in 1913 with the 16th Amendment, where the people's sovereignty was stolen. The Federal Reserve took control of the U.S. Treasury, and the 17th Amendment stole state sovereignty, all in 1 year. Phase four, in 1934, came out with the Rules Enabling Act, and that took control of our courts. That didn't take effect until a couple of years later, in 1938, when the rules were brought into effect. And at that point, just a few years later, the courts were then operating totally under civil law and no longer common law and no longer equity. Equity also has been removed from our courts as well as courts of law. I recently just come to realize that as we're looking at the terms and the meaning of words here. So phase five, in 1944, civil law in full force, the federal courts surrendered to the centralized banking system. 1947, CIA, NSA, National Police State Surveillance Grid came into view. 1948, United Nations established headquarters in New York City, and of course that headquarters really focuses in on the New World Order. The plot was revealed in 1950 in the Reese Committee. I don't know how many people have seen the video on Norman Dodd, who was the chief investigator of the Reese Committee. We do have that up on our website. We might even have that. I'm sure we do have that in our civics course, that particular video. It's about almost an hour long. I think it's something like 54 minutes long, 52 minutes long, or something like that. But a huge amount of information and really the missing information necessary to understand what had been taking place in our nation over all these years that we're looking at. And this plot, of course, actually started in 1776. That plot was already being put in view, in place, knowing that the revolution could be, the war could have been lost, and of course it was lost by Britain, but the question now really comes, was it? In 2001, this is phase six, 2001, Homeland Security Police State Surveillance Grid reached its maturity. 100% control of all communications, recording and storing of communications everywhere, at least throughout the whole United States. I'm not sure how it falls throughout the world, but definitely throughout the United States. And in 2013, John Kerry signed the United Nations Arms Treaty, where he agreed to the Americans would be disarmed. And then the unexpected happened. 2017, Donald Trump became president, foils the coup, begins dismantling the deep state. And, of course, today it's the outcome-based socialist education, which is in full force in our school, destroying our youth. And according to Washingtonian, there are over 80,000 lawyers, 80,000 minions of the New World Order in Washington working day and night to bring forward this New World Order. Now, not that they know about it. It's all compartmentalized, and, they've been told a lie that they believe. They're true believers. They're true believers that the law is correct, and they're true believers that the common law is a problem, and it had to be done away with. And they're true believers in the civil process. They refer to it as Roman law, and indeed it is. And so that brings us really to take a look at what we're going to read tonight. And again, it's only about four pages, so it's pretty short. It's not going to take that long. There was one other thing maybe I might want to bring up before we go forward here, and that is law itself. You know, all law, and we're going to cover this to some degree, but I want people to pay attention and really listen for this as we go through this paper. There are three categories of law, and all law falls within those three categories. If we go into Black's Law Dictionary and we dig through that to see how many jurisdiction or how many courts of law there are, each court has its own law, which is its own jurisdiction. And there are 51 jurisdictions that I had dug up out of Black's Law. I'm pretty sure that's pretty accurate. But anyway, 51. In our nation, the United States, of course, we're supposed to have two processes of law. One is called equity, and the other one is called the law. There's one other category. Those are the two of three categories where all law falls under. The third one is civil law. Now, common law is natural law all on its own, and nothing else under that category. Equity also is also unique in its own. If it has an authoritative process by which the authority of equity comes to be, and in this case, of course, the authority comes from God to the people, to the Constitution, to the legislator. That is proper law. And that's why it's called positive law. You know, we had been looking a little bit at that maybe a couple of months ago, looking into positive law. And now it seems to be pretty clear on why it is truly called positive law. I thought to some degree it was somewhat of a mockery on what it really was. But equity is true law. It is a law that's approved by the people. It was ordained and established by the people through Article 1, Section 8, giving Congress the authority to create law in equity, which there are 57 U.S. codes. One or two of those particular titles are held open and they're blank. There's nothing in there, but 57 places altogether. And again, all of that is lawful, but mixed in between that is the is the conspiracy, is the civil law, law that was put amongst equity without authority. And they've taken equity and they've turned it to civil law. And again, they called it a civil action combining natural law and equity, calling it a civil action, creating civil law where all processes of law comes underneath. And that's where we're stalling. And by the way, pay close attention, because this was done by rule and not even law. The Congress didn't even have the power to do this, of course. Matter of fact, even the people didn't have the power to do this. Again, we either fall under natural law or we don't. It's man's law or God's law. And all civil law falls under men. All civil law could trace its findings ultimately all the way back to Babylon, which is all about the law of the city, the municipal law. It's all about the control of the people, ultimately enslaving the people. And of course, that's exactly what their intent is. Let me see if I can open this page here, and we'll start looking at this writ of mandamus. Okay. This is a writ of mandamus and a decision and order filed in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, the United States Common Law Grand Jury against the United States Supreme Court, Federal Judiciary, and U.S. Senate and U.S. House of Representatives, copied President Trump and Attorney General William Barr. The Federal Judiciary Center, proceeding under the authority of 28 U.S.C. subsection 620, whose purpose is to further the development and adoption of improved judicial administration in the courts of the United States. One of the center's main functions is to educate and train personnel of the judicial branch of government, including but not limited to judges, United States magistrate judges, clerks of court, probation officers, and persons serving as mediators and arbiters. Presently, the center's governing board is chaired by the Chief Justice of the United States, John G. Roberts, Jr. According to the Federal Judicial Center, in 1938, pursuant to its authority under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Among the changes wrought by the rules was the elimination of the federal courts' separate jurisdictions over suits of equity. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits of common law were grouped together under the term civil action, thereby subjecting common law to the will of the state. The ABA United States Supreme Court and the ABA Judiciary via Rule 2, which states there is one form of action, the civil action, committed treason, and is thereby guilty of seditious conspiracy by advocating and teaching the overthrow of our government and insurrection against the law of the land. As per Black's Law, laws derive from precedents, legislation, or custom under three categories. Number one, common law is subject to nature's God. Number two, equity is subject to a constitution written by the people. Number three, civil law is subject to the state. Any law subject to a constitution written by the state is still civil law and not equity. The Constitution defines the law of the land as common law and equity, being the supreme law of the land, whereas the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state, which includes rules, to the contrary, notwithstanding. The ABA Judiciary's dark reasoning for abolishing common law is because they claim that a rigid application of common law rules, also known as God's self-evident truths, maxims, brought about injustice, which is absurd considering that God is just and merciful. they are not. And therefore it follows that his law is just and merciful. The truth of the matter is that common law sheds light on the ABA's, judiciary's, dark deeds, thereby revealing their true intentions. As a result, bureaucrats fear the people via the light of the law, allowing liberty to flourish and thereby prevent the New World Order from filling the face of the world with their dark cities. We the people hold to Romans chapter 3, verse 4, let God be true, but every man a liar. Rules are not law. Rules are nothing more than prescribed conduct in a particular area. Congress was clear under subsection 2073B in that such rules shall not abridge, enlarge, or modify any substantive right. All laws in conflict with such rules shall be of no further force or effect after such rules have taken effect. Therefore, under subsection 2072B, Rule 2 is of no further force or effect. Under said act, the 115th Congress enabled the United States Supreme Court the authority to prescribe rules under subsection 2072A. The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary covertly abused that authority to conceal and abridge the supreme law of the land. It appears that the judges who are expected to know the law need to be instructed in the law, whereas Congress alone was empowered under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18 to write laws in equity. Even Congress does not possess the power to abrogate the natural law. That jurisdiction belongs to God. So tell us, by what authority do these arrogant, tyrannical, seditious, ABA-indoctrinated judges think that they can so act? Do they think that they are above God, that they can just change our natural law to civil law, which places the people under their merciless, destructive jurisdiction? Isaiah chapter 43, verses 10 through 11. Ye are my witnesses, saith the Lord, and my servants, whom I have chosen, that ye may know and believe me, and understand that I am he. Before me there was no other God formed, neither shall there be after me. I, even I, am the Lord, and beside me there is no Savior. Thus saith the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, I am the first, and I am the last, and beside me there is no God. 1938 coup. The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary claim rules are law, thereby abrogating law and equity, placing God's natural law under their jurisdiction, the United States Constitution under their jurisdiction, all state constitutions under their jurisdictions, and we the people under their jurisdiction. This action is the very definition of a coup. Decided, Rule 2 is hereby nullified. The United States Supreme Court, via writ mandamus, is to immediately order all 94 federal district courts to, number one, cease from concealing the people's courts of record and provide access. Two, cease all unconstitutional judicial processes proceeding under civil and criminal or civil law. Three, acknowledge that the grand jury is an institution separate from the court, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. 4. Acknowledge that, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. 5. Acknowledge that, in fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. The United States Supreme Court is to speak. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. The United States Supreme Court is to act. 18 U.S.C. subsection 2382, misprision of treason. Whoever, owing allegiance to the United States by oath and having knowledge of the commission of any treason against them, conceals and does not, as soon as may be, disclose and make known the same to the President or to some judge of the United States or to the Governor or some judge or justice of a particular state, is guilty of misprision of treason, and shall be fined under this title or prisoned not more than 7 years or both. Congress has a duty to impeach when judges are in bad behavior. Treason is bad behavior. Do your duty. It is so ordered. September 23, 2019, Albany, New York. Signed, Jury Foreman, Natural Law Tribunal. Okay. So again, a copy of that, if anybody didn't download it and you want to download it, is up on our website. Let's see. All right, I guess, Jen, do we have any questions?
Yes, we have a goodly number of questions. We kind of stopped in the middle last week, and so we have those left over plus more from this week.
Okay.
Are you ready? If I can find it here. Okay, and we were in the middle of this one. Philip was talking about his debt collector case in California, and he's working with Jim on joining the grand jury case. He says the court issued a void summary judgment. He received a notice of involuntary lien filed by the plaintiff. He filed his own challenge of jurisdiction using NLA's documents on the website on August 27th, and his hearing will be October 31st, 2019. First question, does he need to file anything regarding this lien?
Is he taking a lien out? I'm not sure I missed that.
The plaintiff filed a lien against him, and he received a notice
of
involuntary
lien.
The plaintiff.
The plaintiff, okay.
The debt collector.
Right. Yeah, you know, again, we have these forms up there for people who feel that they, you know, understand the process and can handle their own business and go out and, you know, do what they have to do in the courts. We've established on a couple of different things where we've created some forms that could be helpful to those people. You know, once they do that, they really need to understand where the court can possibly go from there and how to move the court into the direction that you want to move it into, as time goes on. And, of course, the key thing to all of these court cases ultimately is jurisdiction and due process. They don't have the jurisdiction that the courts, that these are open because they're civil law courts. And that is crystal clear under Rule 2. Where the United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary working together, okay, have decided that common law is no more and that equity is no more, and there is now the law of the city called civil law. And that is a key point to understand. But with that, we're in jurisdictions unknown, because it's just a mixed match of all kinds of things, all kinds of, statutes and codes, and then they even make it up as they go. They may even try to use maxims or points of common law that, will assist them in their assault upon the people. It's a difficult process to fight. People feel that they can do it, but I'll tell you, it's an uphill battle. Rarely won, okay, because they'll turn the steam engines on and just roll right over you. If you can take control of the narrative of the court, keep the other side, including the judge, on the defense, you being on the offense, things are working well. The moment you discover that you're in the defense and no longer in the offense, you're in trouble. You're losing. and you must recapture that narrative. The question is you know, what do you do from where do you go from there? Which really is moving it into federal court. But that doesn't mean moving it into federal court that you're going to get what has to be done, because again, you have to understand the court, the jurisdiction that you're in, the process, the fact that you have to understand Rule 2. I'll tell you what, it has clarified a lot for me, realizing what has taken place with this Rule 2. It made things very crystal clear to me, and also gives you an ability to be much more clearer in your conversation. You know, if the judge understands that you understand all things and you're sending him the little messages or making certain points that maybe nobody else in the courtroom understands, you know, in reference to Rule 2, for instance, in reference to civil law, and many other things that we've been talking about over the months, then that's when the judge gets a little worried, and if he's got any common sense, he's going to try to get this court case closed down. And until you can bring it to that point, you're not going to win. There's no other way you're going to win. Now, of course, you know, what we're doing is an uphill battle. It's not going to be a win tomorrow. People are going to move their cases in, and all of a sudden, sunshine and lollipops. That's not the case here. It's going to be a while, and we have to continue to pile it on, and people need to get educated and to come to an understanding. The people do not understand that the Constitution is no longer in play in our courts of law, period. Period. You've got, if anything, civil rights, and he who giveth can taketh. And the people need to understand that. Until the people understand that our heritage has been robbed, and again, you know, generally people just don't even know what common law is. They don't know what natural law is. They don't know what their heritage is. They don't know what liberty is. They don't know these things. They may think they know, but they do not. We've been trained to run away from God. If you're going to go talk to God, go find yourself a priest or a rabbi or something, you know, because, you know, they trained us to do that, talk to men to talk to God. And the same thing in law. They've trained us. If you're going to get involved with something in a legal sense, go find yourself a bar attorney. Go talk to that bar attorney to understand law. And, of course, you'll find it's Roman law. It's civil law. It's Babylonian law. It's all about it's the law of the city. You know, Brent talks about this often, brings up that point, the law of the city. And I never realized how powerful that point is. You know, we've come upon arguments in the court where other sides have brought up this municipal, process or statutes, particularly on the county level, and I guess on the town level too. Not that there are laws written there per se, but also on the county level, not because I don't believe counties do legislative laws. Some might, but they really don't have that power or authority. Laws have to be written on the state level. But that's that municipal law that is written for the cities, that people have to go get permission. Isn't that interesting? You're supposed to have liberty. You're supposed to be free. You're supposed to be sovereign. Yet you have to go beg permission to be able to move from one court to another without going through their municipal lower court law first. Well, that tells us who the boss is and who claims to be the sovereign. Certainly, it no longer is us. You know, in the next paper, I think we're going to focus more on Congress and the problems that they've created in this whole system and how they've enabled the United States Supreme Court to do what they've done. It's not that they were dumb. It's not that they don't understand. They understood, and they betrayed their country. And I just cannot see, I cannot possibly even imagine that the United States Supreme Court justices do not understand that. They understand this clearly, and I don't know how they sleep at night. Maybe because they've had a gun to their head, you know, with the deep state, and they couldn't do anything. Maybe they were stuck between a rock and a hard place. Well, they're not stuck between a rock and a hard place anymore. You know, the swamp is being drained. The deep state is taken out of commission. You know, they're not going to have any place to rest their head, no rock to hide under. So, they, you know, the status quo that they're maintaining I guess they're just not getting a memo yet, but they better get it soon. But at some point, okay, they got to realize that that's not there no more, and it's time to step up and do the right thing. And of course, that's one of the, what we're really pushing for, is for these justices, that some good people in there that are being set free to be able to do the right thing. Hopefully what we're doing will assist that. But going back to the question at hand, I don't know that I can offer anything more. You know, again, you know, and we can't, we don't want to get bogged down with details of court cases. You know, we just, we look at all these court cases that are being joined to us. We don't get into the details. We're not going to get into the argument. The case is not the point in the court. It's the process that they've used as the point in the court. Again, gets back to jurisdictions unknown, denial of due process, okay, being hijacked into jurisdictions unknown. That's what the case is. That's how we are battling every one of these cases. And you see, it's always the same thing in all these courts. So this proves conspiracy. It's just a pylon of proof. Every time we add a case to our case, it's just more evidence, more evidence. And of course, we do intend on making decisions on these cases, and filing it with the proper courts. They will probably ignore it for a while, but they can't ignore it forever. You can't have half a truth. You can't have half a liberty. You can't have half of America. I know Donald Trump knows this, and I'm sure a lot of people in power around him knows this. And I'm hoping that, of course, we're opening their eyes and they're thinking about this and realizing you can't have half a nation. You can't have just courts without a court of justice. And there's only one court of justice. It's a court of law. You can't have a court of justice operated by people who are, you know, owe allegiance to the state somehow. You know, they're elected individuals that are, or appointed individuals that owe their allegiance to the state, to the powers that be. The status quo in the parties, that's where they owe it. You know, the all this funny money they get from these special interest groups, that's what's controlling them. But now it's all falling apart on them. And I can't believe they're that stupid that they're not seeing this. They got to be seeing this, and they got to be wondering, well, what can they do if they're an honest individual that truly finds themselves in a situation where they can't do nothing to fix this problem. Well, you can now. It's time to step up and stand with the people. You can't have half a liberty. You just can't have it. All right, any other questions?
Yes, next one was, I wanted to file a redress of grievances prior to my hearing. Should I do so or not? Yes or no?
No, they're not going to hear. I mean, you know, again, you know, you could be building a case within your case and being doing certain things, and if you got another plan to go from there and another plan to go from there, it's endless. Okay, the only way you're going to win these cases is eventually get into the federal court and get judge in a position where he realizes, I have no place to hang my hat. I don't know what this person really knows. They're signaling me these things that they have knowledge of that nobody brings up in this court, yet they're throwing these ideas in the court. Very carefully, okay, very carefully, mind you, and the judge forces behind the scenes conclusion, which would be in your benefit, and that's the only way you're going to win in these courts. You're not going to win a case against the status quo. They're not going to allow that. And once you trip up and they find out that you really don't know the next step, you don't know where to go from here, that you no longer have control of that narrative, that you no longer, you know, are on the offense and keeping them on the defense. And when that stops and they realize that, that's when the steamrollers come out and you're done. It's over. Case done. So, again, you know, people really need to do their homework. We've got a lot of stuff that we've discovered and are revealing, and people need to understand those things to have a proper mindset to know how to make their battle, which leads me to the point or the idea that a few people can really win in court, very few. unless you have the right mindset and put the people under the right fear. Of course, the other side of the coin is success in what we're doing. And again, going back to courts of justice, unless the people are running those courts, unless the people are the... So I was reading, I was going through today the Lysander Spooner's trial by jury, and he makes a lot of great points in there, so I took a few notes here or there. He makes a lot of good points in there, and it is clear, if there is one toe that belongs to a political power in that courtroom, we got a problem, okay? And if you're in a place where there is no sheriff, or the sheriff is not in control of that court, again, you have a problem. And if you have a sheriff that is chosen by someone else other than the people, like in New York City, you have a problem. Okay, and so we all have a problem. All right, Jen.
Okay, next question. I understand that NLA will file the amicus curiae around October 1st. In the meantime, do I need to prepare the counterclaim to move the case to a different court, or will NLA do so after the 30-day period has passed?
Yeah, well, that's part of our process. If you know, look at again, start getting educated. Start asking questions. Jim has put together some information to lay it out, you know, what the process is step by step. We bring these points up. Last week, we spent time talking very specifically about this process and the steps involved. The amicus curiae is the first step. The second step is moving it into the federal court, which is what we would do. Okay, actually, you have to move it into the federal court, but we'll create the paperwork for you to exercise that. And that's a show cause, and then the next step after that is a decision and order. And then the next step after that is the execution of that decision and order, and that could take some while, quite some while. Again, we're not promising anybody sunshine and lollipops in 30 days. This is going to take some time. We're going to have success together. We're not going to get success independently. Although, maybe the judges involved will be woken up and get the memo and realize there's no place to hide anymore, or they've been being really held under, you know, suppression themselves and are now free to do the right thing. And they may respond properly, and you could win your court that way. That's a possibility. After all, we did have two or three people who were released from habeas corpuses that we've done, even though they won't give us credit of that. They do it around the corner, you know, around the block in a way that it's not seen that the habeas corpus that we did made that happen. No, it was the fear of the people through the grand jury putting together and hammering down that habeas corpus in that particular courtroom and moving it into the federal court for that decision. But again, federal court judges don't make that decision. They've ignored it. They're guilty. Okay? The judges in the courts that really, in a couple of cases where they responded and did the right thing, but other than that, the rest of them didn't. They're guilty. Okay? As a matter of fact, we indicted all those judges, both on the federal level and also on the lower level, the state level. But again, things take time. Jan?
Okay, the next question is, I have often heard you speak about the due process violations in regards to non-judicial foreclosures. My question is, can I challenge jurisdiction in a judicial foreclosure state?
Yeah, because there's no such thing in common law as a non-judicial foreclosure, or even a judicial foreclosure which denies due process and the process of law and proper jurisdiction. It's a civil court. It's not a court of record. It's not a court of equity has no power or authority to hear this case to begin with. Okay, we don't fall under equity. We fall under law. And remember, this is the important thing. People got to realize this and think of it. Think of it in three ways. There is civil law. That's the law of man, law of the city. That's Babylonian law. That's a lawless law. It does not come from any place good. It doesn't come from the people. It doesn't come from God. It comes from tyrants, people who want to control, to control a city, to control a state, to control a nation, to control the world. This is what they want to get everything under. That's civil law. And they tell you, you go look, it's civil law, a civil complaint or a criminal complaint under civil law. Okay, so that's one. And there are only two, and underneath, as I mentioned, underneath civil law, Black's Law, dictionary, reveals 51 different civil law jurisdictions. Okay, well, actually, mixed among them are also the knowledge of positive law and natural law, of course. But generally speaking, all the rest of them, they're part of those 51 out of Black's Law. But nevertheless, all these courts are civil law. Okay. The only other one, and look at, you take any other republic, the Republic of China, Russia, or any other nation or country that has a constitution, okay, where they have equity. If that constitution did not find its authority in the process of coming from God to the people, to the constitution, to the government, for legislation, and then to the judicial process for execution properly of that legislation. If it didn't come from that, that's the only true equity called positive law. Okay, there are plenty of nations or countries that are republics that have a constitution and has a law, but it's not positive law. Why? Because it didn't come from God to the people, and the people, and God is above the people, and people is above the government, and that's the process. If it's not in that linear, then it is not positive law. It is not equity. So again, you have civil law, you have equity, and you have natural law. And natural law operates according to the rules of common law. And the rules of common law are many things. To begin with, it's common sense. It's maxims. It's truths that cannot be denied. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Okay, all men are created equal, and so on. You cannot argue or debate these truths. They're facts. The Declaration of Independence was written through and by the counseling of maxims, truths, undeniable truths. Okay, our Constitution was written under the guidance and the counseling of maxims. Our Bill of Rights was written under the counseling of maxims, the guidance of maxims. Our courts, our common law courts, are guided under maxims, and everything else is the fact. Everything else is facts. The law is the maxims. It's natural law, the things that cannot be denied. A thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. Being innocent is a common law maxim. You are innocent, period, until someone proves you guilty. You are innocent. And the state must look at you from that perspective. Okay, again, that's a common law maxim. All right? For every injury, there must be a remedy. A common law maxim. Okay? This is what guides us. That, in these courts, that and the facts, the maxims and the facts is what brings us through that whole process. And it's very simple. Very easy to grasp. You don't need no high education in order to understand these things. It's common on all men. It's natural. It's obvious truth that cannot be argued. All right, I'm not sure whether I answered the question. Just repeat that question one more time, Jen.
I would if I could, but I can't. I erased it because I was going to the next one.
Shame on you.
The next one has three parts, and I'll read all three together because I think you can answer them all at once. It says, I took the first step in joining my federal case with the NLA. I filled out the form with case number and names of judge and prosecutors. My questions are, is there a screening process for the cases to be joined to about how long before I know that the case is joined, and three, how does joining my case to the NLA affect my current strategy to withdraw a plea and challenge jurisdiction?
Well, the first order of business is the amicus curiae, which challenges the jurisdiction, period. So it already begins in that process. That's where it begins. And it denies the court a jurisdiction because they don't have it. But joining the case, filling out the paperwork and getting to join the case and deciding whether we're going to, take that case for jury. I can't think of many cases or many things we wouldn't take one. But if it's a case that the individual initiated themselves, that's not a case that we would necessarily get involved with, because you already went into a court and you're coming at it from a different perspective. It's got to be where the government is chasing you, so to speak, or the mortgage company unlawfully using the civil law courts in order to leverage themselves your money away from you. There will be some cases that we may not take on, and it's not that they're hopeless. It's just not at the moment it wouldn't be wise to take it on. I don't know that we've really ever rejected any, other than maybe a court case where the people had initiated it, and we can't take that kind of a case on. But I'd have to talk with Jim to refresh my memory whether there was anything. We've had some cases we questioned on doing it. But again, we get back to the same thing. This is all about jurisdiction. We can almost take on any case because it's about jurisdiction. They don't have it. They're coming at us with a law that has no power, no authority. It'll maintain and have its power and authority as long as the people believe it. Okay? As long as the people continue to fall under this fiction and allow this fiction to abuse us and fleece us, then that's how long we'll have it. But until the people step up, we need to hit that critical mass. And remember, we don't have to bring, a couple of hundred million people into this process. As Jefferson said, again, I always get, confused on this one. Pretty sure it was Jefferson, but it could have been Franklin. Okay. We don't have government by majority. I'm pretty sure that's Jefferson. We don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority who participates. So, we've spoken about this. We need 15,000 people across the nation to take back the entire political process. Relatively speaking, that's a small number. We want more, okay? And we will get more, but it starts with 15,000 people, okay? Same thing to take back the judicial process. We only need 15,000 people. Matter of fact, that's about it. We don't need any more than that other than the people to become educated and start responding to the call when they're called for a jury. But a lot of things have to be repaired in that whole system, and it's a mess. But we got to get back to the way things were. So. All right, next.
Okay, Friday, September 20th, was 30 days after the completion of service of the show cause motion in my court case. What can I do to keep my case moving for relief demanded in the show cause?
In other words, I'm not sure. Did they went through us to move the case, and we did an amicus curiae show cause?
It sounds okay. Like they did, yeah.
Okay, so it's 35 days. It's really only 30 days, but there's grace periods involved. There's a period of time moving through the mail, and so we just throw 5 days on top of that 30 days. So 35 days. And we should be able to just move it in at that point for cause. We do have the paperwork to do that. Jim may not have the ability to do it at the moment. He may have another week or so before he can get to that because he's working on other things. And by the way, we can use more help. Anybody wants to volunteer their help, not just here with Jim to work the paperwork with him, but there's lots of things we do and people can volunteer their time with. The only thing holding us up is sort of a bottlenecking and not enough people helping us to do the work. But as soon as we can, again, that you could talk to Jim and ask him where he's at on that. I'm not sure. Don't know. Next.
Okay. I went to a hearing. This one's fairly long. I went to a hearing on two motions. One, motion to dismiss unlicensed practice of law. Two, motion to terminate said case based upon a defective warrant. I challenged the court's jurisdiction in my motion to dismiss. The judge asked the prosecutor to respond to my challenge of jurisdiction, in which the prosecutor only said that my motion challenging jurisdiction is legally insufficient because the alleged crime took place in the county where the court is. I objected by stating that venue is different from constitutional jurisdiction under common law. The judge asked the prosecutor to respond, in which the prosecutor said that it didn't have anything to say. The judge then denied my motion, stating that he has jurisdiction. I told him to state it on the record. He said that he has it, and that's his opinion.
It's an opinion. That's about it.
Yeah.
It's not a decision, okay? Clearly, he didn't make it. Clearly, look, he was biased. Why? Because the individual gave plenty of information. I've hopefully done it by affidavit. If he's done everything by sworn statement and affidavit, and the other side didn't do anything by affidavit and answered the way they did, very obscurely and with no meat or anything. The judge can only rule on what's before him or her. They can't presume or add their own things in there. And the fact that the judge made that decision with practically nothing from the other side just proves the fact that they're biased, and therefore what should have been done immediately was tell the judge they need to recuse themselves, number one. And the next step also, the other point is that the judge already believes he's got jurisdiction. Clearly that biased decision he just made proves that. But nevertheless, the decision has to be made in a court of record, and I'm presuming that they're in town courts. I really don't know. So the first court of record above that would be the county court. So, and then, of course, the state court. So the decision has to be moved there. And the judge, it's the judge's job to move that over there for the decision to be made. That wasn't done. So, again, you know, it goes right back to understanding the game plan. We already know what they're going to do. We already know what they're going to say. We already know what their position is. Okay? So we have. It's like playing chess. You have to already, when you know, you have to have plan A, plan B, and maybe even a plan C, because you have to figure this out. The judge can either do this, or maybe he'll do that, or maybe he or she will do the other thing. Whatever that. And for each one of those things, you have to have a plan to go to the next step. And if you don't have that, then you're really not taking control of your case. You're still in your learning mode. And I speak to myself on these things, too, because I started out there myself. I had to go through the school of hard knocks and then wondering, scratching my head, leaving the courtroom, what the hell just happened in there? I just don't understand it. Why? Because we think there's a constitution. They know there is no constitution in play here at all, okay? And therein is the major difference. To understand that, to make the point on a civil court, where civil court comes from, it comes from men, and the fact that, you refer to the Constitution. Okay, Article 6, the law of the land. Article 3, law and equity. I think it's Article 3, Section 2, it's law and equity. Okay, that's the jurisdiction. Okay, how does civil law come to play? Oh, well, in 1938, this, that, and the other thing. In 1934, they made the Enables Act. 1938, they put the rule. Yeah, a rule. How does a rule change the law? How does the rule overtake a constitution? How does that happen? The whole system has changed. We've lost our sovereignty. We lost our state sovereignty. We went through the list before. Okay, we've lost our unalienable rights. We've lost our constitution. We are totally at the mercy of merciless people, totally out of the mercy of merciless people. And so we have to realize that, and we have to figure out how we're going to make these arguments in the next step. So again, if you're going to court and you don't know what the next step is, depending on what the judge may do or the other side may do, then you're not prepared to really battle the case. When you get into common law and you have a common law lawyer, okay, the facts belong to the people involved. They're the ones that create the facts. People ask questions and so on and so forth. The common law lawyer really just maintains and upholds the narrative, okay? But it's up to the facts of the case. And then the common law lawyer, of course, laying out the logic of the facts on how you might be innocent or guilty or whatever the case may be. But it's all about controlling the narrative. If you don't know the next step and you don't realize what they're going to do in court, you know, I remember being very, very frustrated going to court with a couple of cases that it's just endless. You keep going back and back and back and back and back. One case particular up in the Catskills, we must have been going 9 months. Just keep going back and back and back and back. Nobody making, what was going on? They didn't know what to do with us, and we didn't know how to really take control of that court. We didn't know how to really move that case yet. You know, again, we were in the learning mode. And if people are in that mode, you got a lot more. You got to go get some studying, but then also the experience plays a major role in this too. But you can grow off the experience of others. So when someone has an experience in a court in a situation, under the conditions that they lay out, whatever it is, and then they share with you what they did and what experience they had and where they went from there, well, you can grow off of other people's experience as well as your own. There's nothing better than, of course, on-the-job training. The experience is the key. You can have all the knowledge, but the exercising of knowledge all requires and depends on your strategy that really comes from experiences. All right, anything else?
I was arrested with an unsigned warrant from a judge. He looked in his computer, printed out a copy of the unsigned warrant. I showed him countless amounts of case laws, including the state constitution that mandates that the warrant be signed. He asked the prosecutor to respond. As usual, the prosecutor had nothing to say. In all horror, the judge said to me in open court, "My case is different. Once the state attorney has probable cause, he can go ahead and have the sheriff execute the warrant without a judge or magistrate's signature." I asked him which law states that. He said, "Just appeal me if you disagree."
Yeah, because he doesn't know. Well, also on top of that, it also requires a signed affidavit by the injured party. Where is the injured party? And, look, they love to put people in jail, they seem, especially on these lower courts, and they can go up to a year. Anything over a year and a day now, you got to get a grand jury indictment. Well, where did they come up with this idea? You know, an infamous crime is what the Constitution talks about. The Bill of Rights is crystal clear. It's an infamous crime. Just go to Black's Law Dictionary and look up infamous. And it is a crime that requires or a crime that gets attached to a jail sentence. If you go to jail for 3 days, that's an infamous crime. Okay, you cannot be put in jail without going through first. You have to be indicted. Okay, and in order for the crime to be there, there must be an injured party, and there must be a sworn affidavit of that injured party. Even the state cannot act upon you without having a sworn affidavit. They never do. They never do. Okay? And you can win on that position itself unless you got the ignorance of a judge that, like this guy, that just made these statements. I mean, they're the dumb statements. You know, they do continue to go to the prosecutor because they have no clue what to do. Really, they should just take their robe off and their little gavel and get off their seat and give it to the prosecutor and let them play both roles because... That's what you got going there. These judges are morons. They absolutely know nothing. They don't even know the civil law. They really don't. Okay, whatever they read, and then they go back over to the prosecutor to get the answer. And clearly they don't even understand the repercussions of their actions. I mean, really, this is... this is a sedition against the people. You know, this judge is really, especially if you put you in jail on this, ultimately, if you can get into a court of law, you know, he's done. But that's the problem, getting into a court of law. And that's the mission of National Liberty Alliance. All right, what else?
I started the appeal process today. The hearing was last Friday. I'm going to move the case to federal court for cause. Is this a good move?
As long as you know what to do, it's a great move. It's the right move to do. Look, you can't mess around in the court. You come into the court, you bring your point up, you push the court to do what has to be done. They do the wrong thing. Don't go back to that court no more. Move it. Move that court somewhere else. Okay? You know, you can move just the decision of the court to a panel of judges. Okay? It's called a reconsideration of decision by a panel. You know, when you push, you look that up. You push for a reconsideration of a decision, and it could be just a decision in the court as the court is progressing, and the court makes a bad decision, the wrong decision. No, I want a reconsideration of that. Well, you have the choice of the reconsideration for that judge to reconsider it or to get a panel of judges to reconsider it. Obviously, you're going to want a panel of judges. Let's get two or three more on the hook, because if you're going to have to end up in federal court, you might as well take four or five judges with you. But in any event, who knows, they may do the right thing. You know, again, you know, what Trump is doing, okay, if people aren't really in the know of what Trump's doing, and again, I bring this up from time to time, if you really want to know what's really going on behind the scenes, X22 Report is one of the best places to go. And Black, what is it, the Black Patriot, no, Black Conservative Patriot, is also another good place to go. They got a lot of really in-depth research and studying and looking into what's going on and following up on Q and putting all this stuff together. But if you're not really paying attention to what's really going on and you're getting your news from here and there, it looks bad for Trump sometimes, and you wonder how he's going to get out of this. This whole thing is a setup. You know, he's got a narrative going against him that he plans to turn around, and he's allowing that narrative to build and build and focus and find nothing there, so then all of a sudden, wait a second, you know, they've dug so deep, and all of a sudden the tables turn and you find out it's the other side breaking the law. You know, this is how Trump is working on this. And now question becomes, these judges and stuff, you know, do they really know, or do they think that that they're going to win? You know, the fact that Trump has been in power just about 3 years now and still has not brought all these people to justice yet, maybe they have this false hope to think that they're going to be able to hold off another year and possibly even win the election. I mean, that seems to be the plan, you know, but it's a ridiculous plan because it's so obvious that they've self-imploded to begin with. But again, it's just it's part of a process that's going through, that the whole thing's going to turn around. That's what we're waiting for. That's when we're going to have the success, when this whole thing turns around. And again, remember, we're not just educating ourselves, which hopefully you are getting educated here. We're not just educating ourselves. We're also participating in the education of this administration. We're also participating in the education of the United States Supreme Court justices who may one day step up and do the right thing. And I got to believe, you know, there's three or four of them that are ready to do that. I got my doubts about the chief judge over the past years, kind of really surprised where he's gone. But nevertheless, who knows where he's going to go. But the day's got to come. We can't have half justice. You know, they can't go to do the right thing and only go halfway. First of all, it's obvious. But it may not be so obvious unless the people, because the people can't see it. People can't see it because they're blind. People are blind because they're ignorant. They don't know. They don't understand the difference between the laws. They don't understand what really happened here. And that's where our job is at, to get educated and pass that education along to others. So we all need to be doing this, and I certainly hope that's what everyone's doing. You know, people expect to be ignorant and free. Forget about it. All right.
Okay, for this next one, you're going to need your crystal ball. It has four parts. I'll read them all for you. I watched the Quanto today, and I am wondering how come Obama wrote those executive orders.
Hold on. You're overmodulating. Can you back off your mic a little bit?
Not really. I'll just talk softer. How's this?
Okay. Good. Try it.
He starts out, I watched the Quanto today, and I'm wondering how come Obama wrote those executive orders. It was his work, correct? How could I not know about this until today? Why is this not exposed widely?
Because they own the media. It's as simple as that's the truth. That's the facts. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. You know, they own the media. The media is part of the coup. The media is part of the problem. You know, and, you know, Trump makes that point every day. He's talking about the fake news, the fake news, the fake news. And we're talking about the fake law and the fake courts. You know, it's all fake. It's phony. It's fiction. It's not real. As long as people... Reality is the way one perceives it. As long as the mass believes the lie rules, and that's reality. And until you wake up from that nightmare through knowledge to realize that you've been conned and that you've been robbed and they're robbing your children and you need something that you need to do about it, it's to wake up and step up. And people are waking up every day. You know, again, we need to get out. There's a lot of people. There's millions of people waking up in the United States. Millions. Hundreds of thousands and now millions. Trump has really woken a lot of people up. But they really, even a lot of them, haven't got the real in-depth understanding of can't even think of the word I'm looking for, but in other words, they're going to be, you know, blown away, okay? They're not going to be prepared. And even a lot of people who are woke up to some degree may not really be prepared what is really going on behind the scenes and how close we've come to losing our nation. I mean, we just talked a little while ago about all of these different things that have taken place, over the years, the process and the phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, phase five, phase six. That was it. This was, you know, Hillary Clinton was probably it. You know, they too have to wait for the right event, the timing to pull off what they want, and they'll create that event. But they're not in a position to create such a big event no more. And they're not in a position of power. And in 2017, the unexpected happened. I was totally unexpected by it. I never thought that Trump would be as in-depth and astute of what's going on as he is. I knew he's an intelligent guy, the right guy for the job, but I never really realized that he was going to take it to the ump level. I mean, the ultimate. He's taken it all the way. And that's a wow factor. But this should have been the time we should be at war. Things should be falling apart. And the New World Order should be moving in and really putting closing that iron fist on us. But it didn't happen because of the unexpected. So, anyway. All right.
Are you aware of freedomschool.com?
Sounds familiar, but I don't know it. Sounds like I heard that before, but I don't know.
Okay. What about the birth certificate? Can one use this to accept for value and pay off one's debts?
If you want to go to jail, I know one person who did that, and after he got his big check 30 days later, feds came and broke down his door.
Yep.
So if that's what you want to do, you know, don't fall for all that stuff. Look, what they're saying has truth. Don't get me wrong. But don't think you're going to take their game plan and go into their sandbox and think you're going to play the game out and win by their rules, because their rules only work for them. They certainly don't work for you. They're going to crush you and destroy you. I wouldn't even go anywhere near that. You know, we have continued to survive because we stayed away from all that stuff. We don't get into the man on the land stuff and getting rid of this, your birth certificate and your driver's license and your Social Security number and, you know, going and claiming that you know, all you're doing is just saying, hey, I'm over here when you're ready. I'll be right here, okay, to get me, you know. But it doesn't work. It may have worked for one person here or there, and that's rare, but even that just doesn't work. It's not going to work. These people teaching this stuff are really doing a misservice, a disservice to people. You know, they're not, they don't realize it. You know, they're really putting people in harm's way. Anyway, next.
What about bankruptcy fraud?
Bankruptcy fraud. I'm not sure I understand the question on that. I mean, I know about bankruptcy and I know about fraud, and did you get any information on how they're putting that together?
Nope, nothing else other than that.
And I don't know what the contents are, you know, context is to understand.
Okay. Moving rapidly along, how do we use subrogation properly in law?
How do we use subrogation?
Yep.
I think I got to get that word defined. It's familiar sounding. Do you know what the meaning is?
No, I did not look it up.
Okay. I'm not sure. I'll try to look it up while I'm, as we go forward, maybe I'll pipe something out. But I'm trying to think of the meaning of that word, subrogation. Maybe Terry, can you be looking that up for us? I don't know if you got Black's Law, it might probably be a good place to look it up, but just Google it and see what they say. Do we have another question?
Yeah, I got Black's Law, subrogation. I'll be back in a minute.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a long question, so she can have time to look it up. This fellow has two cases in federal court in Georgia. One is supposed to be a trial by jury. He wanted to get 25 people to review his case and make a ruling. He was going to do a modified grand jury on his own by going out and finding these 25 random people. Then he found our website. So he wants to know, what is the fee or donation required or requested in order for us to do a 25-member common law grand jury?
Well, first of all, that's not what we're doing, at least not right now, and it's not going to go anywhere, and it's not going to be accepted, and there's other... You remember... We're walking into a statutory process, trying to bring a common law process into a statutory process, and even doing that, even with the right terminology, we'd be put at risk to do that. For instance, if you want to go talk to the grand jury, they're going to do everything they can to block you, and no matter what you do to get to that grand jury, they will block you everywhere. And if you're persistent enough, they're going to give you a new residence. Okay, it's called JAIL. That's what they've done to an individual who was trying to talk with the jury, and they convicted him on stalking the grand jury. Never got his day to speak to them. But that's the problem. Look, this is a statutory... The juries are not real juries. They're statutory juries. They're controlled by judges and prosecutors. They are stacked. They are thoroughly psychologically evaluated to be placed in the proper cases in order to make the win for the state side, to maintain the status quo. And that's been going on for a long time. Again, I was reviewing back through Lysander Spooner's today, Trial by Jury, and that is a big issue. It's been going on. He was, what, in 1856, I think he wrote that? Okay, and it was happening back there then, okay, stacking these juries and controlling the juries. These lawyers have been at it for a long, long time. You know, when Rothschild said, give me control of the nation's money and I don't care who makes the laws or anything else, you know, I'm going to control everything. Well, that was a lie. That was a lie. You can control all the money of the world. If you don't control the courts, you're going to lose. You got to control the court, too. So it's sort of the moving of the hand, you know, and they didn't want you to look over there. But he's got to control the courts, and they do. They control the courts. Just think about a rule has changed everything. Okay, the substitution, fell away from me. Let me go see if I can get
it. It's kind of long. I'll read the main part here, which I just gave to you, but it goes on. You know, it's the substitution of one person in the place of another with reference to a lawful claim, demand, or right, so that he who is substituted succeeds to the rights of the other in relation to the debt or claim and its rights, remedies, or securities. And then it goes into a legal fiction through which a person who, not as a volunteer or in his own wrong, and in the absence of outstanding or superior equities, pays debt of another, is substituted to all rights and remedies of the other, and the debt is treated in equity as still existing for his benefit. And the doctrine is broad enough to include every instance in which one party pays the debt for which another is primarily answerable, and which in equity and good conscience should have been discharged by such other.
Okay. All right, so read that question again now, Jan.
How do we use subrogation properly in law?
Well, I have no idea at that point. You know, again, I don't know what... I can only answer a question if I... hang on a second. I'm getting feedback here.
It might be me. Let me mute.
All right. We have to have a little context and to understand what's going on, and then maybe what strategy is trying to be used. But I'm not aware of any that would properly work. I mean, look at, you know, we do have a Christian principle here in the sense that Christ took our place, you know. Penalty of sin is hell, and the hell God has in view is hell eternal, you know, and here Christ comes and pays for that sin. So that is kind of a picture here. So it may have some merit. I just don't, and of course, if you have a debt to pay and someone comes and pays it for you, it's done, you know. Now, someone taking a place, again, I don't have any context. I have no idea what they're talking about to be able to even respond, so I don't know. But any other?
Yes, continuing with one.
Yeah. Did we have some of these left over from last week?
Yes, we had a bunch left over from last week. Regarding this fellow's trial by jury, he says it was dismissed because he would not fully participate in discovery. However, he believes that discovery is not involved in the common law court of record.
Well, that is true. It's not. Although, you know, again, you can consider discovery. It depends on how the discovery plays out. I mean, you do an affidavit, it must be rebutted. An affidavit unrebutted rules the court. So if you make a claim A, B, and C, and D, and the other side responds to A and D, well, B and C rules the court. So in a sense, you know, by making an affidavit, you're also pushing the other side to respond, and you know, it's sort of discovery to some degree, but really you're looking for the other side's position on this. Now, it is true, discovery does not, they can't throw a case out because you refuse to participate with discovery. But remember, they have the rules of the court, which has nothing to do with us. They operate under rules. And those rules don't apply to common law courts. Common law proceeds according to the common law rules, not equity rules. After all, we're not in an equity position with the people. We're not doing any commercial things. We're not participating in some government agency. That's where it's for the bureaucrats and the commercial activities that apply to these equity rules. Okay, so, yeah, that shouldn't have happened. But they do whatever they want because they make it up as they go. They don't care.
Okay, have you watched Richard Luke Cornforth's videos on void judgment?
Richard who what for what?
Richard Luke Cornforth's videos on void judgment.
Void judgment? Yeah, I've no idea of that. So.
Okay, well, then he goes on to say that in them he explains why it is not lawful to include the judge as a party in a collateral attack. He says, although the judge loses immunity when continuing, under lack of jurisdiction. He cannot be named in collateral attack challenging jurisdiction because he's not a proper party in the case. Instead, the judge should be sued in a separate suit, but not as a party of the jurisdictional challenge.
Misprision of treason, fraud on the court, participating in a conspiracy, he applies. He loses his any kind of immunity he may have had. Immunity only works as long as he's obeying the law and the process, and if something happens and someone gets injured, he can't be held liable because he applied the law and was doing things properly. Once they step outside of the law, which is what they do, okay, they lose their immunity. So, yeah, that person's wrong. I wouldn't buy that at all. You know, all the officers of the court are conspiring. Let's start off just in the most simplest point, okay? You go into a court, you know, and let's say you're drawing in there under court, and the jurisdiction doesn't apply to you, okay? It's a civil law jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with me. Now, they're not accepting that because they believe under Rule 2 of their rules that this whole thing has changed, and everything has changed, you know, according to these people. So you're arguing against that, you know, this doesn't apply to me, okay? Well, who's doing this to you? Well, if there's a prosecutor or a lawyer for the other side or whatever working with the judge, there's a conspiracy. They're conspiring. They are hijacking you, first of all, into jurisdictions unknown collectively, using the court, the machinery, the judicial machinery, to destroy you and take from you whatever it is they want without due process. So, yeah, they're liable. Yeah, you go after them. I wouldn't let them go for a moment. If you're going to spend the time to pursue, get them all.
Okay, he says, I am bringing this up because if I understand correctly, NLA is including the judge on the jurisdiction collateral attack. Am I missing something here?
Not missing anything. That's correct.
Okay, and he says, I am aware of NLA's...
Remember, that collateral attack is upon that court, okay? All the participants of that court. And the judge, if he becomes part of that, which in these cases he always is, that's where the collateral attack takes place. You're going against that court directly. You're not appealing nothing because we don't appeal anything. We just require justice and go forward. But go ahead.
I am aware of NLA's reasoning for including the judge in collateral attack. However, my feeling is that it might put the new court in the defensive and create bias towards a negative ruling, because they might not want to promote actions against their own. For this reason,
I would think that
a separate lawsuit against the judge makes more tactical sense.
Well, if you're going to a court and expecting a political animal to make a decision on your court, then you're going right back into their sandbox and dealing with the civil law. We're not dealing with that. We're common law. We let the people decide, unadulterated from any activities of the court in any way, shape, or form. They have nothing to say. They have nothing to influence them, nothing, and that's it. So, yes, if you're going to be concerned because you're now going back into their sandbox to allow a political animal such as a judge to rule over the sovereign who has now become the slave, well, then, of course, maybe you better be concerned. I would agree with you if that's what you're going to do. But if you're going to go and pursue and continue to push forward on a court of law, then that's the only way you can go. You have to go after them all. They're all guilty.
Okay. This fellow was arrested 2 times, both because of speeding, but when they stopped him, they found out he didn't have a driver's license or insurance. So they impounded his car, charged him $500 for storage in a car, and $300 to tow it back home. And his license is gone. What does he need to do that is effective? Because he's watched so many judges just run over the people, even if they have submitted motions, pleadings, case law, and so on. How do we break through?
Yeah, well, look, I almost think it's the person I know writing this thing, you know, making this point, because I know a case exactly like that, except for they never had a license. And, well, look, let's use common sense here, right? I have a driver's license. And, you know, when you go into the man on the land stuff, they teach you to get rid of all of that stuff. You know, I'm not going to get rid of my driver's license for two reasons. Number one, from time to time, I did do commercial driving. So I want it for that purpose alone. So you can have a good reason to have that license. Number two, it's good a good ID. And it seems anywhere you go, if you want to open a bank account and things like that, it's almost like you have to have a driver's license or a New York State ID or something to do that. So why buck the system at this point? If we want to change that, then let's change it. But before we can change it, we first have to take back the courts. And then we have to think about, you know, how do we fix the problems we've got? And then what do we want to do about it? And what can we do? But that's going to take time before you can fix those problems. So, number one, you know, I wouldn't be driving without a driver's license. Go get a driver's license just to keep yourself out of jail. If you don't mind sitting in jail from time to time, like Michael Bodnarik, you know, he's done that. He's been driving for many years without a license. And it's to the point, last time I heard him speaking, they don't even bother him no more. You know, he finds that he'll be stopped by, he tells some stories, interesting stories, and one time, you know, stopped by all these cops, and they keep mounting up more and more cops. And then all of a sudden, they all just went away. And he got in his car and drove away. Because the word came down, you know, I guess he's kind of, you know, known, and especially probably in his home areas anyway. But he talks about spending time in jail because that's the way he wants to make that fight. I don't have time to spend in jail, and I don't want to make the fight. I don't want to be in jail anyway, so. But, you know, so I got a license. Insurance, okay? Nobody should be driving unless they have insurance or a bond or something. I mean, yeah, you can do your own bond and so on, because if you do injure somebody, there's got to be something to take care of that problem. Insurance is a good way to go for most people. If you have lots of property and you can put that up as a collateral, well, that's fine too, I guess, and so on. But you know, in today's world, driving a vehicle, you should have something in case you do have a situation, and especially if it's your fault and negligence especially, you know, what's going to happen to this person if they become a paraplegic or something, you know? So we got to take a little common sense in here, and we also have to realize that, well, let's deal with what we have to deal with until we can make the changes, you know? You know, I've been through that thing, give up your Social Security, get rid of your birth certificate, get rid of your driver's license, make your statement and file it with the county clerk, put it on file, the declaration of who you are, I'm one of the sovereign people, and blah, 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 and all that stuff. But it only creates more problems. I mean, I don't know why people want to do that. You've already got all those things. Use them until you get rid of them lawfully, you know, rightfully. Not lawfully, but we could figure something else out. We're not at a point where we can figure something else out because we don't have control. And until the people get control, we can't solve those problems. But anyway, look, at I personally think, you know, children in school, certain education they should have. Of course, certain subjects is obvious, okay? Amongst those subjects should be civics, okay, and the Constitution, driver's ed, okay? I think everyone should be taught how to drive. I think the speed limit signs are a good rule of thumb. I think they should be taught, that people should obey them, and if there's a light, obey the light and the stop sign and all those things. It makes sense. You don't want to fly through a stop sign and someone else come from the other direction doing the same thing and you're both dead. But we can use our common sense. You know, you stop at a red light, 3 o'clock in the morning, there's not a soul around. I mean, you look and you go. Big deal. But you stop at a red light and there's a lot of traffic coming the other way, well, you wait, you know. Giving tickets for those things is one thing, but the rules of the road should be out there so that people can have a guideline to operate and use their common sense exercising those things so we're all safe and we don't injure each other. I've seen a lot of the old movies. I don't know if any, you go into YouTube and you put in pictures or video, film or video from the end of the 19th century or the beginning of the 20th century, or the 1920s and or 1910, you know. And not only here in the United States, there's a lot of videos you'll see even in other countries. And you'll see videos of people driving, and you'll wonder, wow, how many people must have died in those streets, you know? I mean, there was just no organization. Just people just drove. And but it does make sense to create some rules and ideas and operate under them. But again, you know, if you break those rules and you injure someone, then you got to pay the toll for that, in the sense that you know, you got to take care of that person's injury. But anyway, what else? Anything else?
That's it, John. You're done.
Wow, that was a long time. All right, I don't see. Let's see.
No,
okay,
I
guess
we're
just going to move on. Yeah, I don't see him.
Brent anywhere? Yeah.
Was he here last week? Because I know I went through some things last week, and we didn't give him his time. But I don't see him tonight. I don't know if he was here last week. I knew he was traveling the weeks before. But, all right. Well, we'll go on past him right now. I'm just looking at my notes to see if there's anything else we want to think about here. All right. Probably in the next month or two. Time's moving quick. With September, October. I'm kind of hoping in October to start talking a little bit about the committeemen, to prepare people that may want to run for committeemen in the next coming election, 2020 here coming up. Some people run for that position in January, you know, the earlier part of the year. I think like January, February or something. A lot of us run in the springtime for that. But so I think we should start talking and thinking about that a little bit, maybe next month, October. And people need to be considering that. All right, I guess we'll open the queue up. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it has been opened. Star 6 to... And I think a 1 to get into the queue. Star 6 and a 1. Okay, let's go. Keep an eye out for Brent, and if he comes in, let me know, okay?
Okay.
Okay, let's go to, let's see, the next person is a 480 number, no name, first name and state, 480.
Sean, Arizona.
Sean from Arizona. How you doing, Sean?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I've got an issue with, and I sent the questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. I don't know if that made it through or not, but nevertheless, I'm here, so I'll fire away. I have an issue with a state regarding a failed business venture that included an investor, or several investors, but in this case, just one investor. State is suing me for violating Securities Act. I guess they're relying on a deposition from the investor that, you know, they've initiated. I don't think the investor even went to them, but nevertheless, he's since passed. I don't know, the deposition didn't say anything necessarily. He passed, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the deposition didn't say anything other than he lost money necessarily, but then they've got a sworn statement from, I'm assuming somebody I've never heard of, I'm assuming somebody they paid for to go through financial records and build a case and make it look like I've done wrongdoings in addition to a disclosure issue. I guess there's a couple of questions regarding my ability to join her, and that is if I have given up my rights or granted jurisdiction by way of acquiescing by taking a benefit, and I'll start there.
Well, it's a securities issue. The state does have, we did give them the authority to deal with those issues in securities. The problem is, and You know, I just realized this now, just recently, shall I say, that we don't even have equity anymore. So what is required in that case is equity. And since they're dealing with you in civil action, civil law, whether it's criminal or civil, you know, the it really doesn't much matter. You have an equity situation. I'm not sure that this is a case that we can do a joinder with, but I can think about it and see. You know, I'm not sure on this.
Yeah, the biggest issue is obviously that they've denied my right to due process by way of not allowing me a trial by jury. It's all motion to summary judgment.
Right, and that is, well, again, you're clearly in the wrong jurisdiction. So they made that clear that they're going to do a summary judgment on you, that they're not going to allow any jury into this, and you've asked for a jury?
Yes, and not only have they, I've sent the challenge of jurisdiction. I had a call with the judge and the prosecutor, and they moved up the motion for summary judgment that the prosecutor had been, and moved it up several months to Monday of next week, and just did it so arbitrarily. I think they know what's coming. I'm sure the judge is aware. I'm sure somebody's aware of what you guys are doing over here. And so since I've defaulted them on that, you know, I did explain that, you know, they don't have jurisdiction. The judge came back and said, I believe I have jurisdiction. I explained that made it to where he, you know, believes he has jurisdiction. And so he's prejudiced. And so it moved it all up, and it's going to come to a head, obviously, Monday because of it. So that's why I'm wondering if it qualifies.
All right. I think we could take it in, because again, even though they might have equity, but even in equity, you have a right to a common law court. Anything over $20, you have a right to require that, even in equity, because they're coming out after you criminally, right?
No, it's civil.
Civil.
They've done it in a civil suit for Federal Reserve notes that they want, and they want it's not criminal.
Okay. Well, look, I'm thinking about all this, and Jim's going to love me for this, but we may have to rewrite the amicus curiae, and not that we need to rewrite it. We just want to add a line or two in there because of what our research and writing papers over the past couple of weeks concerning Rule 2 and of course, this Rules and Enabling Act of 1934. I think we need to add a few lines into our paper for that. And that could cover not only the courts of law, but also the courts of equity. Now, because they're not coming out after you, the government's not coming out after you, or they are coming out after you?
It's the state.
Right, the
district court.
The state's coming out after you civilly?
Yes.
Wow, I don't understand that.
Well, I mean, it's for money. It's a monetary, you know, you violated a Securities Act, and we want money, and we want you to pay back money to a...
Yeah, I think we'll take this on, sure. Talk to Jim, get in, but hopefully Jim's on tonight, or he's listening. Hopefully I'll talk with him early enough, because I know he's getting ready to write papers and get papers moving in for people for the amicus curiae, but I want to add in a couple of sentences on this rules, because it makes it more powerful, and it gives us a bigger reach, so...
Awesome,
so
very much appreciated. While you're on, I think I understand what the subrogation question was. I don't know if if you kind of caught that, but there's some teachings out there with offering up the straw man and using the public trust to sort of offset and.
Oh yeah, I could see how that played out. Yeah, dangerous. Yeah, I see that. I think back to when I was learning that stuff, and I could see that. Okay, that's probably
right,
what they were talking about. That's very dangerous. Nobody wants to play with that. I'm telling you, stay away from it.
I very much appreciate everything you're doing, and God bless.
Okay, you too. And talk to Jim. We'll do something.
I'll do it. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller, which is Matthew. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Matthew.
Hi, my name is Matt. I'm from Texas. Currently, I'm involved in a dispute with the state. They're claiming a criminal case, which is actually civil, I believe, to be in nature. It's a violation of a statute where a cop is alleging that I broke the law. All my due process and civil rights have been ignored in every hearing. I've never had the opportunity to ask the district attorney questions about jurisdiction, about clarifying the syntax that's written in the statute that I'm alleged breaking. I've only gotten to talk to the judge like two times, and he's completely ignored that I've challenged the jurisdiction. Most of my evidence that I have submitted is in the form of affidavits and notice and demands, outlining the jurisdictional issues as well as the standing of the prosecution, since they have no damaged or injured party.
Let me ask you a question. You wrote affidavits and you filed them in the court?
I have, and I've gotten notaries, and I've even, sworn and subscribed under penalty of perjury, which doesn't require a notary.
But that's okay.
And
but it's a sworn affidavit, so you have a notary. You got the papers, you filed them, and how long has it been since you filed them, and have they answered them?
They haven't answered any of them. I've filed them since the beginning of January when I was alleged to have broken the statute.
How long
and the judge told me at the status conference hearing, which is the final hearing of pretrial before I'm set for trial, which is November 26th, 2 days before Thanksgiving, he told me, I have all your motions, and I'll make rulings on them. And I tried to ask the judge that, all of these are affidavits and separated from notice and demands, and affidavits are sworn to on the record, have to be admitted as evidence. They can't be ruled discretionarily against, like motions can.
All right. I got questions. Hang on a second. I got questions.
Sure.
Well, first of all, a statement. Mindset is everything. You got to get a proper mindset, and you got to proceed with that mindset. First order of business is you have to proceed as a sovereign. You have unalienable rights. You don't have civil rights. And if any judge were to tell me, he didn't want to violate my civil rights, I would tell him, you can violate any civil right you want because I don't have civil rights. I've got unalienable rights. I'd make that point clear. Now, what kind of a court are you in? A town court, county court, state court?
It's a district criminal. It's what's called a third district criminal court of Tarrant County, which is in Fort Worth.
Okay, so it sounds like it's a court of record, okay? And
right. It's not. It's not a federal. It's a state district level for felony.
Right. Well, it's supposed to be a court of record, though. All courts that we go into, the people go into, are courts of record, okay, which are courts of the people, courts of justice. They run courts of injustice, okay? All right,
right.
So that gives me a little bit of an understanding there. Now, how old are the affidavits? How long has the affidavits been sitting in the court unanswered?
Well, I filed the notice of removal was the first thing I filed back in March to have it removed to an article from an Article 1 court to.
Well, hold it. I don't want to go into all of that. What I want to know is the affidavits, okay? You've written affidavits, and the other side did not answer, correct?
Right. So that would be May, pending my second arrest,
You see, you didn't move the court. You should have moved the court for a summary judgment, which would be righteous and just, even in a common law procedure where you can move for a summary judgment because they failed to respond. They acquiesced. They defaulted. When you put an affidavit in, they got 30 days to respond to that affidavit. An affidavit unrebutted rules the court. Therefore, you should have filed a default judgment.
Okay. I don't know how to do that. The second issue that I'm having is that when pending my second arrest charge, they modified my bond conditions to infringe on two of my constitutional rights. They told me I can't buy a firearm, which I haven't deferred.
Let me help you again. Let me help you again. You don't have constitutional rights. You have unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. Huge difference.
Right.
Okay? So I know you know that probably, but you have to be thinking that and talking that and in a way that you don't have to explain it, but you use the proper language, make the proper points, and whatever it is.
Right, and that's just me trying to summarize because I don't want to take up everybody else's time. I know they have questions, and I know you're helpful to them. But, I want to tell you just how corrupt the court is, and I understand exactly what you're saying. But like I said, that's just me trying to summarize, what's going on.
Okay.
I wrote a writ of quo warranto, affidavit jurisdictional complaint, and an affidavit criminal complaint. And I submitted that the week before my hearing, which was the status conference. And so they have 30 days to do that. But here's the thing. I know I'm running out of time, and I heard you talk about the legal process tonight. So what I'm wanting help in is how do I file for a default judgment, because that was the first issue you brought up. The second thing is I need to know how to organize my appeal paperwork. And the third thing I want help with is writing a writ of prohibition so I can submit that to the Supreme Court and stop all judgments.
They're not going to do that. They work with the lower courts. They've unified the courts. At least they've done that in New York, and it appears they've done it everywhere. And so even though the upper courts are going to hold up and keep you down in that administrative system that thinks that they're a law court, and they allow them to operate that way. But I'm looking on our page. I thought we had something up here. Instructions on how to file an affidavit of default. It's a very simple thing. If you go to, let me think a minute, affidavit of default. I ask Jim if he's got a copy of an affidavit of default that you can work off of. You know Jim?
I do not know Jim.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me see what I could find for you.
Can I give you my email address and
I prefer putting it up on the site for everyone to have. And when I get it and put it up there, I'll put it up under due process.
My bond conditions say that I can't own any electronic devices that can access the internet without being monitored by Tarrant County, probation.
That's
my bond condition.
The
alleged charge is online solicitation of a minor, which is another way to say that an undercover cop committed perjury by stating that he was under 18. And in the internet, I don't believe anybody is who they say they are, because anybody can say they're anything, and it can be a 54-year-old dude in his underwear. You have no idea, So to me, I was under the impression I was getting catfished, and I was just really depressed in my marriage and stuff, and I made a bad choice one night. And, not that I took it as role play, but the state is trying to say that I had the intention to commit the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're using the chat transcript as, alleged conjecture to say that my intention was criminal, where the state would be the de facto injured party. In my case.
Well, look, if they haven't responded to your affidavits, then do an affidavit of default. You're going to do move for a default judgment, and that'll be that. Now, again, if they're building up, and again, I don't know how they think they even operate. It goes back to the same old thing. These are jurisdictions unknown. But I'll see if I can get something up if you want.
Yeah. That's what I assume, too, because, you know, if the judge is acting to enforce a statute, he's an extension or agent ministerially for the agency that's involved. So that, to me, I surmise from that statute, which is in case law, that the judge is a clerk masquerading as a judge, and he's bought and paid for. He's colluding with the district attorney. And not only that, if he's a clerk, he's not in his judicial capacity, he's in his private capacity, so how could he issue a warrant of arrest or take an oath from another officer, you know, to even have the credibility for probable cause to issue said warrant? I think the warrants are invalid too, but I don't know how to argue that from a legal perspective.
We do have an example of an affidavit of default. If you go up to click on due process and then go down to the bottom and get into the court forms and process instructions, you'll see instructions to and forms to challenge jurisdiction underneath that. Underneath that, you'll see a process. There's a show cause, a notice of motion for that show cause, and instructions for challenging jurisdiction. Also a file and demand, and then an affidavit of service, and then an affidavit of default. Now, if you do an affidavit and you do any kind of a paperwork and they don't respond, then they've agreed, they acquiesced, and then you can file the affidavit of default. So,
well, that's what I tried to do with the notice of removal that was unchallenged by the district attorney. I did the same thing with the Texas Rule 12 challenge. I gave him 21 days, and it wasn't contested by anyone on the record. They weren't challenged point by point. When I tried to ask the judge that I had a tacit agreement, acquiescence by not acknowledging it, it's a legally enforceable binding contract by inferred consent, he said the court doesn't operate like that. And then I tried to point out that his dress code that's posted on the door in the courtroom, no tank tops or T-shirts, that clearly is an inferred tacit agreement. But him and me both know that under the Fourth Amendment, we're secure in our property, and we can choose to wear any kind of clothing that we want to in a court of law. And they can't abridge, they can't make a ruling or abridge. You know, I don't follow him home and tell him how to use his riding lawnmower because it's his property. He's secure in the Fourth Amendment, just like I don't expect him to tell me what to wear in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we don't want to get too deep into case details or anything. And, you know, everything we do really is focusing in on the principles of law and the fact that they're not following them and then keep pushing down that road. When you file something and they don't react to it, okay, they make a decision and you deny that decision and say, I want a reconsideration by a panel of judges, and they don't follow up on that, then it's up to you to move the court someplace to do something else. The only option you have at this point, because you're dealing with lawlessness, the only option you have is to get out of that court, so you got to move it to another court. And so you could move this.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, you have to go into. Well, this is where it becomes a little tricky because you need knowledge. I mean, you know, we could tell people what they can do, and we can help them with some forms and stuff. But if they don't have the experience and they don't know what to do when they get there, that's a whole nother problem. When that federal judge, because you move it into federal court for cause, why federal court? Because of denying of due process, you're in jurisdictions unknown. They don't have jurisdiction over you. And so on. So now here you're going into a federal court. That judge is going to stick up for these people and maintain the status quo, you know, the other side. There's no getting away from that. But you have to give him reason to reconsider that. And then he has to kind of wonder about you because, you know, when you start to share your knowledge with them and moving and doing things and saying things that most people don't even know about or never do, lawyers will never do what we're doing, and few people know what we're doing also because we're discovering this. A lot of the stuff, I'm sure other people have discovered it too, but we haven't met those other people yet. But not many people are approaching it in the way that we're approaching it. So You know, again, if the federal judge sees that you're moving in ways that you understand the system, what's going on, and you understand what's happening around you, he's going to be concerned and wonder. And that's an option that you might be able to win by, okay? Because you're not going to win the case.
I submitted my writ of quo warranto not only in my case file, but I also sent copies of the jurisdiction complaint and the criminal complaint to the FBI for checks and balances, and also to the Texas Attorney General, because at this point, the judge is completely ignoring jurisdiction. I've stated on the record a challenge. He just assumes that he has jurisdiction, hasn't been proven on the record, you know, and he's ignoring my affidavits and regarding them as motions. I want to joinder my case with you guys, but the question that I have is, because these charges have cost me two steady paying jobs, right now I'm doing temp work just to pay for my court documents, I don't have $5 or $10 to contribute monthly. Every place that I go besides you guys that on the fringe that has information of court, they all want donations, they want like $400 or $500 to do my paperwork.
We don't work. We have operated for a lot of years without money. I mean, you know, we just on donations, and we've given everything away for free, and we've done courses, given them away for free, but then we started to make a move in a different direction, in the sense that we'd like at least $5 a month or more to help us keep going. But if people don't have that, we can go forward without that. We want everyone to have this knowledge. We're not here to make money. But we do have to survive and pay the bills, and things are going along okay, especially recently. You know, we've been operating in the red. It seems like every month we struggle and then finally catch up and move, and the next month it's always a struggle. But lately, because we have a lot of people responding and taking the course and giving the $5 a month or more, and some other things that we're doing, we're now at a point where, you know, we're able to pay the bills without that much of a struggle anymore. But we always, we want to give everybody, even if they can't afford it, we want to give them the knowledge. So, you know, just get hold of Jan, and he'll flip the button for you to get in there to take a look at things and take the course and do what you got to do. And one day when you've got some money, you'll donate to us.
Definitely.
But as far as joining the case, talk with Jim, write me in this particular case, I'd like to see a small synopsis of what's going on, you know, what the makeup of the case. Nothing long, very short, one page or less, you know. Because I want to be careful. Certain cases, we may not, it's just not wise to take on, you know, certain cases. Not that we don't want to help the people, and not that we won't help them a little later. Just right now, we want to be a little careful, because we're coming in and it's an uphill battle. And we don't want to give them any fodder to be able to, you know, come out against us.
It's just the violation of my due process and my unalienable rights are so blatantly obvious in this case.
That's every case in the court.
Yeah.
Every case in the court. And, you know, I don't think there's been an awful court since the 50s.
Say I take your sage advice and I do the affidavit of default judgment, and I moved to court to have a panel of judges reconsider. What if those are also ignored? Then
the nature of the case. I need to see a little more on that, because maybe the affidavits, maybe there's nothing for them to respond at this point yet. I don't know. Okay, and again, I don't know how they're operating. But where you do get them is the fact that you're in jurisdictions unknown. That's the key that we operate on everything here.
The federal areas.
Jurisdictions unknown, you're not getting due process. They're incapable of giving you due process.
Right. Hey, man, thanks for your advice. Does Jim have, like, when you have a contact us at the NLA, does Jim have, like, his email up there? Would I be able to recognize it if I went to your website to email him?
If you want to get old, Jim, send a message to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay. All right. I will do that. Hey, thank you so much for your time and consideration. God bless.
All right. You too. Thanks.
All right.
Okay, let's take our next caller. Let's see. It's a 605 number. I don't have a name. What's your first name and your state? 605.
I'm Greg in Michigan. Do you hear me?
How you doing, Greg?
All right. The area code you see for calls from me is not correct. It's the phone system I'm using for my company, but I'm in Michigan. I spoke with you a bit last week. I've got a bit of a different question for you guys, and I hope you can give me an answer. And I know you'll tell me.
Go ahead.
You'll tell me, look at X22, you know, which I need to do, and other people have told me about it. I'm just busy with many things besides my work. But anyway, I'm hoping you can answer me regardless. And I just emailed this question in to questions at NLA a little earlier, but maybe it hasn't been read yet. I've been hearing for more than a year now about these rumored 50,000 or so sealed indictments against all these deep state people and these pedophiles who are part of the deep state and all these other crooks and criminals in Washington and elsewhere around the country, I'm sure, and been hearing about how they're going to be tried in military courts and they're going to be locked up on Guantanamo and all of that. When is this going to start happening? When is somebody finally going to be arrested to where we can see that Trump and the people helping him are actually doing this stuff? Because I'm getting really impatient with it, and I know some other people who are too. And how do we know this isn't just like a hoax or something? I mean, I'm really starting to wonder about that.
Okay. All right, well, first of all, you know, like you say, you're not paying attention to X22 or maybe some other places that might be doing these kind of things. First of all, I'd like to just say and remind you and think about this, that patience is a virtue. You know, good things come to those people who wait. I mean, not just wait for it to happen, but, you know, do things and wait for the process or whatever takes place. Timing is everything. And National Liberty Alliance understands that very clearly. You know, we've been at this for actually since 2013. So we've been at this 7 years. And we go back further than that, you know. I mean, I've been involved in this since 2000, 2001. The beginning of 2000 is when I got involved with We the People with Robert Schultz and then other things as time went on. But we had the committee man thing that we started back in 2009, I think it was, which morphed into National Liberty Alliance over time. So in a sense, National Liberty Alliance has really been sort of in operation at least since 2009. We were in the courts in 2010 and 2011 trying to figure things out, and then we made a change in direction, you know, coming down here to do what we're doing now with the court systems. But the question is okay, when? You got to, you know, if you don't understand the strategy that's going on by the deep state, they are panicking, number one. They're doing everything they can to stay ahead and to keep the narrative. And so they're bringing up different issues. I mean, even, what's her name, Hillary Clinton, not long ago, maybe a couple of weeks or a month ago, and actually this is the second time she made a mention of this, that she says, oh, by the way, you do know that they can take video and implant, take a person and place them into the video doing obscene, you know, she didn't use the word obscene, but doing illegal actions or something, and it's not real, it's not true. You see, they're trying to get in ahead of the game. And remember, the deep state is working with the mainstream media. I mean, it's constant. It doesn't end. I mean, I get frustrated myself, especially when I hear, when president, no one, I have never seen a president as open as this president. He talks to the people every single day. Okay, and so he's doing press conferences all the time, and they're so disrespectful, you know, the bias is so obvious. But anyway, you know, you still have a high volume of people that believe that Trump is a bad guy. They believe that everything he says is a lie because they're following all this fake news. Now, a lot of people are falling away, but you got the people who really aren't paying attention at all. They just pick up the pieces here and there. And this is a very, very dangerous thing that's going on because it could trip a, a violent revolution in the streets to some degree. Pretty rare that that might happen, but the possibility is there. And Trump is trying to make this obvious. And so he really, even though they think they're in control of the narrative, actually Trump is. He is playing them like a fiddle. And he wants them to talk about the things they're talking about. Why? Because they're guilty of those things, and the tables will eventually turn. But it gets back to timing is everything. And you can't move that. And if you got to wait for that timing to come, and you're not sure when that's going to happen, you know it's soon, it's coming up, but you don't know exactly when. I mean, that's how we're talking here at National Liberty Alliance. Timing is everything. And we started filing our papers just at the right time. And we're filing papers every week. We're going to try to file papers. But we're waiting. We're waiting for critical mass. Okay. We're also, and I hope that that's coming up real soon for us. We're coming up to 8,000 members now. And so we've got a pretty big membership. But we need that critical mass. And I know we've got some interviews coming up, and that's going to get more, more traction. People are going to learn more about us and hopefully come out and get involved with us and work with us and so on and so forth. But what's really going to take the whole turn for us, go back to timing, is everything. Until these judges understand that there is no more place to hide, that they're not being protected anymore, that the deep state is gone, okay, or about to be gone, and arrests have taken place and so on and so forth, until that happens, we're not going to really get great traction. We got some traction, but that's when we're going to get big traction. That's when we're going to be able to really press hard and hopefully, again, be met with critical mass at the same time. Now, I do believe, no doubt, first of all, if you listen to Trump in his speech, you could tell an individual by their conversation. They'll reveal themselves, and if they're hiding things, it'll be revealed as time. It's just the nature of the way things are, And if you listen carefully to Trump, there's no doubt he has a desire to do the right thing and make America great again. I've been listening to him talk for years on end because I come from New York City, and he's been on the news a lot or on talk shows and so on and so forth. And he's been talking about the problems and he's hoping someone would get in there, fix the problems. Well, he ended up to be the guy, and he is the guy. And here he is. And, he's doing exactly what he talked about 20, 30 years ago. This guy has not changed, number one, okay? So I happen to have that knowledge because I come from New York, and anybody going back and watching some of the old clips, you can see him on YouTube. He's on different night shows and stuff. So he's been very consistent, number one. He's been very clear that he's there for the people. He makes the statement to the nation's... what's the name of that organization down there in New York City? Help me out there, Jan. Let me see if I can find it real quick. United Nations. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. United Nations. Okay. He goes to the United Nations and he makes a speech. We have it on our front page. And he says, I was elected for the people. The people elected me because they're sovereign. And it's the people that are sovereign. So he talks about us being sovereign. He understands those things. I've been hearing from a lot of great sources. Let's take Q alone, for instance. When Session was in play, at least two occasions, maybe more, Q came out and said, trust Sessions, okay? Things look really bad for Sessions, that he was a traitor, he wasn't doing his job, and so on and so forth. And Q came out and said, trust Sessions, just trust him. Nothing else, just that, okay? Why? Because clearly he wasn't doing for 2 years nothing, all right? It would be insane to think that Trump had a plan and didn't plan in the justice system to start working on indictments and all these things while he was repairing the economy. The first 2 years he had to work on bringing business back, okay? He had to work on getting rid of a lot of problems in government and sort of setting the stage. And so he took a couple of years to set that stage, and even 3 years. Actually, the fact of all this stuff with this Russian gate and all this stuff going on actually was a benefit for him, okay? It first of all, revealed to at least some of the thinkers out there that were Democrats to realize that the fake news is fake, okay? And that's number one. Number two, it gave him time to do what he had to do, and it also laid out a position for a lot of things that took place that he's going to use against them, because they've said a lot of things. A lot of things have taken place. Now it's time to turn the tables. So do I think that there's 50,000-plus indictments out there? And absolutely, I think that there's that or more. And I think that's just Sessions alone, what he's already done. They're sealed. And a lot of them have happened. There's been a lot of arrests, and the news is not reporting on it, you know, but that's being reported on these other alternative news stations. Again, X22 is reporting on it. SGT is reporting on it. And a lot of other different alternative news places are reporting on it. But they aren't, you know, the seizure of gold, okay, to return back to the United States. That happened, what, a year and a half ago? That wasn't reported on. Nobody's hearing about that. So, yeah, I think you got to have patience. And the question that you have to ask is, are you ready? Are you ready for something like this to happen? And what I mean by that is, are you ready to step up and take control, to take back this nation from the grassroots level, to work with other people, to do what has to be done? Are you ready? And if you're not educated in the process of what's going on, you're not ready. And again, that's what National Liberty Alliance is preparing people to do, to be prepared, to be ready to take control of the nation. We have government by the consent of the people. And that's what we are trying to teach the people, how to consent to government, to take control of the judicial process, to take control of the political process. And when you got those two controls, you've got it all. We now have government by consent. We have government that will fear the people. But we don't have those controls, and that's what we're trying to get back. So we should be paying attention and paying a focus towards that and keeping an ear to the ground and try to get the inside scoop on what's really going on. And I will tell you, you know, you mentioned that you didn't have time, but look at, find 1 hour a day or 40 minutes a day. Some of this guy's things are even 20 or 30 minutes long, but a lot of them are about 40 minutes long. He does interviews too, and I would say watch the interviews also, but if you don't have time for that, you should have at least, 40 minutes or a half hour a day to be able to watch and listen to the news. He will give you a lot of insight. He'll make you, he'll give you the information you need to understand why it's not happening yet. And
you have a way to verify any of these arrests that you've learned about from X22 or wherever else?
The only thing I have, truth is self-evident, okay? So it takes time. You sit and listen. First of all, on the alternative news side of things, the people that are mature and serious and really careful about what they're reporting, because there's other people who are haphazard and say stupid things and really give the whole thing a problem. But if you find the people that are consistent and mature, careful, and they do their homework, you'll find that they're all reporting a lot of consistent things, and so you've got that harmony of truth happening out there. And they're not just regurgitating each other. They're doing their own homework. That's number one. Number two, clearly Trump has a plan. And, and he even mentioned about the storm a while back. What was that, a year ago or so? He talked about the storm.
Right. Yeah, I recall.
And Q, there's no doubt about Q and who Q is, and that Q is military intelligence. There's no doubt about that coming right out of the White House. No doubt about that. I don't even think we can doubt much that even Q plus, it's Trump himself, okay? So listening to Q talk, because that's part of the key here, giving you information, and then, go listen to this video, go read this article, go see what happened here and happened there, So these people that are working that out, yeah, it's pretty consistent. It's pretty obvious. I don't see no contradictions. Anybody that is investigating something to find the truth, they just get the people talking, and they look for the inconsistencies, they look for the contradictions, or they look for the harmony. And if there's harmony, I mean, of course, people have different perspectives, different point of view, so things are a little different here or there, but it's generally the same. You can just tell truth as time goes. Truth is self-evident. Okay. So, but it takes time. And from me, I've been listening for quite some time. I'm convinced. I'm literally 100% convinced, not 99, 100% convinced, listening to the people that I listen to and seeing what I see, and very much so listening to whatever Q has to say. And, of course, when the president, who's out there every single day talking, I'm listening to him and others. Yeah, it's clear. You know, look at Graham. Yeah.
I was going to ask if you think, and Graham is another interesting one, and where he's at right now. And do you think Steve Bannon is still advising the president?
No doubt he's playing a role here. I don't know if he's advising him at this moment, but he's playing a role here. He's out doing his job from where he's got to do it. Just like we here at National Liberty Alliance is out doing the job that we have to do. Everybody should be doing something, okay? They should be doing something to take back this political process and the judicial process.
Well, Graham is becoming a bit of a mystery anymore, just where he's at, really. But he just kind of goes back and forth. One day he's with the president all up and down, and another day he's taking some issue with him.
Well, look, he has a little issue here, a little issue there, but, he'll tell you, I got my own opinions, and sometimes I think he's wrong. But, I don't know anybody that I know that I believe is 100% right all the time. I don't know anyone. I had a great Bible teacher, and I didn't even think he was right all the time. Nobody's right all the time. I'm not right all the time. We get corrected, hopefully, as time goes on. So, yeah, you expect that you're going to have some differences here or there. Why not? I don't have a problem with that. But anyway,
well, I hope you're right, though, John. I'm just really been waiting for so long to see some of these people that are keeping us in, under their thumb wrongfully to finally be held accountable, taken to court, locked up, etc. And I've just been waiting for a long time.
Absolutely.
And it gets difficult after a while. I'm trying to keep the faith here, but I'd really like to see. And so I'll have to look into these sites you're talking about. Maybe I can read about these arrests myself, and maybe I'll read some things that'll persuade
a lot of
me
these
it
reports,
has started.
A lot of these reports that these guys put out, if you go down into their text area, they'll give you a lot of URLs so that you can go and read different things or watch different videos and get some of the information and so on. If you got the time to do that kind of research, you see, that's why I don't have the time to research all that out. I'm thankful that these guys do, and I see they're very consistent, very mature, and trustworthy. And I see them hitting it on point, after point after point. I believe, no doubt, that Trump has got 100% control of this whole thing. But timing is, I know this from life, my own experiences in life, timing is everything. And we always knew that here where we're heading. We knew a long time ago it was going to be a while before we'd be able to do certain things. We always knew we were going to do what we're doing right now. We didn't know how or what we're going to write and do to file with the courts, but we knew what we were going to do. But we had to move ourselves here, and we had to prepare us. Our timing is everything, you know?
You got any thoughts on what you expect to happen with us in China now?
Oh, I don't see any problems with China. I mean, they're going to make a big to-do about it. I think they're going to come around. They have no choice. The economics, the squeeze that he's putting on them economically, they have no choice but to come around. I don't see any war in view. Yeah, people, say all kinds of things, but I'm not seeing anything crazy happen. I think China will fold. Look, China's got internal problems, just like we do. The deep state's over there, maybe from a different way, but the deep state's over there, just like we've got it here. And they're all dealing.
Or worse.
Yeah, and even in
the
Korea.
Same as Russia. It's all organized crime, really.
Yeah. So we all have the same problem, okay? But I know it's coming. I know it's coming. I'm kind of surprised it's taken so long on the one hand, but then when I look back and see all the things that's happened, all the things that had to be done, how huge this is, yeah, this takes time. And the plan has always been an 8-year plan, okay? Always been. I think the plan of arrest has got to happen before the next election. I think by worst case, you know, the beginning of next year, but I think it's going to be more likely this year. But again, timing is everything. The conditions have to be right, you know. You got to write.
Well, I was wondering where the election was on Trump's mind regarding this indictment and arrest issue. I hope he does not decide he needs to wait till after the election.
Oh, I don't think he can. And I think he knows.
I don't think he should. I don't think he should.
Look at first order of business. He's got to take these people down. I just don't see it going into the next election.
If he does it before the election, I think the support for him will become just a tidal wave.
Yeah, but remember, he's got to do it in a way that the news can get out. You know, a lot of people complain about his tweeting and stuff and all his stuff. He's constantly tweeting, but that's the way he communicates with us. Look, there's a lot of stuff we wouldn't know if it wasn't for him doing that. They hate that.
Well, sure.
They hate.
That's right. You're right.
And he's,
all right, John, thank you very much for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Greg.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Yeah. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Let's take our next caller, Otto from California. You got the mic. Otto?
Yeah. Hi. Good evening. Thank you again for everything you guys are doing. It's awesome. I have a question. I actually filed the jurisdictional challenge with the court, and before that, I'm doing that through you. But before I filed my own, but I'm actually doing the joiner. But before I had done that, I had filed a motion to compel, and I went to the hearing. They basically denied it, obviously, and. They also issue a minute order for a sanction for $200. Now, the minute order basically doesn't say anything about the authority for issuing it, doesn't explain anything, it's not even signed. I think it's just a trick for me to pay it and thereby acknowledging the jurisdiction, so I don't know how to proceed.
Well, if they're going to threaten you with jail if you don't pay, pay. If you don't feel threatened, then you know, do what you think you might want to do. No, don't pay, maybe. I don't know. But look, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Don't worry about giving them jurisdiction because you're really trying to figure out how to defeat these people. They're all frauds. They're operating totally unlawfully, 100% unlawfully. Jurisdictions unknown. Laws unknown. And they have abrogated the common law and equity and our Constitution and everything. They're doing whatever they please. Okay? So it's an uphill battle.
Okay, so I'll just go ahead and pay it just basically I'll do an affidavit.
Look at it. I get stopped by the cops from time to time. Usually they let me go. They don't even give me a ticket, you know. And I don't know why, but, you know, fine. You know, I'm very polite to them and so on and so forth. And especially cops in my town. I think the word is out. Don't give the locals tickets, you know, because the judges need our vote, I guess, you know. So maybe that's what they think. I don't know. But in any event... you know, when I get a ticket, though, I send a paper in. Half the time, I never hear from the court again. The other half of the time, they continue to pursue it, and they push it towards giving me a fine. And I have two options. I can either pay the fine or take them to court and fight them and sue them. You know, and I don't have time to take them to court and fight them to sue them. And so I'll just pay the darn ticket, and I throw it in a file, and maybe one day I'll go back and sue them all. I don't know. But it's there. You know, I got all of the evidence in a file.
Okay, I'll just go ahead and pay it, and then, you know, I'll deal with that later.
Yeah. Look, the big battle is winning the war. And to win the war, we need to take back our courts. All the little battles that we lose on the way there, you know, they're important to win it if you can, but look, you can lose every battle as long as you win the war. That's the key to this whole thing. You know, when Washington was fighting, I mean, he lost a lot of battles. I mean, there was all kinds of problems and situations, you know, the weather and, I mean, the list of problems go on and on and on. But he won the war, and that's the key. He won the strategic battles that allowed him to win the war.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'll just pay it and avoid any other consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thanks again. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, you too. All right, let's take our next caller. It looks like Judson from Judson, yeah, from Louisiana.
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, this is Justin.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to jump to question 8 because y'all were referring to some of them earlier. Question 8 is, has one considered that magistrates, clerks of court, masquerading as judges, presume the privilege of denying a motion, being that the term motion is up for their discretion and consideration? Would it possibly be better to title our motions as writ?
Motions as what?
Well, like a motion is to move the court.
Right.
Upon reading the definition of a motion, it's saying that it's basically up to the judge's or magistrate's discretion to.
Well, if you're asking
deny
them
a motion.
Well, if you're asking them the permission to move the court, that's one thing. I don't ask the judge permission to do anything. A notice of motion is an important thing. A motion means you've moved the court some way, and you've exercised your authority to move that court. You don't care what you don't go get permission from the judge to move the court. You just move it, and you expect that he's going to play with fair game here, which they don't. But that's okay. You're just piling up the problems again. When you start moving the court and you start seeing that they're just breaking the law over and over and over again and you challenge jurisdiction and they ignore it, you know, we shouldn't continue to go back to get beat up. We just move the court. Get out of there. Move it to federal court. But then again, you know, how do you do that? You know, it's a catch-22 for most people because, you know, you could tell people what to do, but when they get there, they don't know what to do after they make the first move. And you know, look at that's why if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
Right. So they you know, they try to get someone in a wordplay game, and as we referred to last week, you know, clearly defining one's terms, yet you know, kind of working with their wordplay a little bit. You know, once decided instead of using affidavits of truth. You know, we've used affidavits in truth as an extraordinary written remedy. So it's not of truth, it's in the truth. And it's an extraordinary written remedy, you know. So.
Well, I never thought about the difference between of and in. You know, I do know that in law is a very important phrase that's used, but so is at law. But I had to think about that in and of. In law and of law. But anyway, go ahead.
Right. You know, thinking on that is they have affidavits of probable cause of arrest instead of affidavits for probable cause of arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Constitution for the United States of America instead of the Constitution of the United States of America.
Right.
Where y'all put
I understand.
That
possessive, authority. Yes.
So yeah, the words, the prepositions, for, of, at,
in. They love to play with word games. And even when I was studying this Rule 2 thing here, they were playing some word games where they changed the names that all magistrates, when you hear the word magistrate, means magistrate judge. But they'll still just use the word magistrate in the rules and stuff. But they've already declared the fact that when you see the word magistrate, it means magistrate judge. Well, you know, look at a judge can be a magistrate, but a magistrate cannot be a judge. Okay, if that is their level as an officer in the court as a magistrate, then they clearly are not judges. But again, judges wear the magistrate cap when they go into a common law court. So they can play both roles. It's just that they have a cap of a judge in the equity and a cap of a magistrate in the court of law. But they did this, I believe, they did this, you see, because most of the magistrates, I think, again, I don't know, they structured things differently in different states, and I'm thinking on the federal level. They got magistrates that are now working in civil courts that have combined, they claim that has combined equity and law together and call it civil action under civil law, okay? And so they got to give the magistrate judicial powers. So it's just a game. They play with words, building their fraud and going on and on and on. You know, sometimes you can't even keep up with all this stuff. And who wants to, you know? But nevertheless, look at it's all a fraud.
Speaking on equity, referred to, you know, an affidavit as an equitable estoppel before. You're talking about going on offense instead of defense. Yet, are you familiar with estoppels or equitable estoppels?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it, estoppel, yep.
All right.
But again, you know, that doesn't mean it plays a role in common law.
So, sovereigns use affidavits, correct?
I'm sorry?
Sovereigns use affidavits when they go into the court because you keep referring to affidavits. So how imperative or important those?
I'm missing the first word you're using. Are you saying sovereign affidavit?
Yeah. Sovereigns ask questions and sovereigns use affidavits because that's testimony, you know, so... A judge can't necessarily deny an affidavit because that's your word.
Well, look, at the way the judge is supposed to operate is he's supposed to play fair. He's not supposed to have a side. He's supposed to be, you know, you're not supposed to be biased. And they're supposed to rule only what's before the court. If the other side is brain dead and doesn't understand, wow, we should do this or that, and the judge knows they should have done this or that, the judge can't do this or that for them. You see, and that's the problem, you know. They do whatever they want to begin with, but they shouldn't be doing it for them. They need to be ruling what's before the court, okay? And they're not. But again, you know, I don't even want to be in an equity. Well, I don't want to be in a court where I permit a judge to make a decision. I mean, you could do that. As long as it's properly run, but they don't even, there's no justice there, so. But you can't even get a jury either that's untainted. There's another problem.
Interesting. So some like misdemeanor cases, actually they won't offer you a jury, you know, trial. And would that be unconstitutional?
If they offer you a jury trial?
I've watched videos online and like the judge or court wouldn't offer a misdemeanor, say traffic ticket, a jury trial, but it'd be clearly stated under the U.S. Constitution as well as the state constitution, you know, to allow anyone a jury trial or something instead of just a judge-only trial.
Well, again, all those courts are unlawful. They shouldn't be operating. They have no power, no authority. They're administrative. They don't have the power to fine or incarcerate, period. They do it anyway. How do they get away with it? Because the people are ignorant. Because the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. The more ignorant we are, the more advantage they'll take of us, and we have no clue that or understanding of what they're doing. Okay, so again, it's all about really getting knowledge and understanding what your battle is. But you know, you can if we had just judges going in and operating properly under the Constitution, and if you had a contract disagreement case, okay, you know, and it's a civil case, you know, a case of people against the people or whatever, and as long as you're going to have a just judge in there that doesn't play sides, you know, isn't maintaining status quo, then it might be advantageous to go that way in a court because you can still appeal it if they make the wrong decision, and you should win in the appellate level. And you can always ask for a panel of judges for a reconsideration of whatever decisions are being made and save some time there too. going into having a trial by jury could be really involving to some degree. It takes a heck of a lot longer and so on and so forth. But if you felt that you're not going to get the justice, then you definitely won't. In today's environment, you're not going to get the justice. But the other problem on that, going into a jury, it's not even a real jury anyway. It's a stacked jury, statutory set up to maintain the status quo, just like the judges.
Gotcha.
So it's just a mess, and this is why we're battling it.
Okay. Doing the trial, and, you know, before going to trial, the judge won't honor issues, you know, with law. And you expect to get more justice out of the judge, being he knows the law, not the jury, you know.
Yeah, but what law does he know? What law? I don't want him to know any law, you know, except I want him to know maxims. I want him to know the truth. I want him to know justice. That's what I want the judge to know. Look at, you know, when you go into an equity court, then there is statutes and codes and all those things, but we don't belong in equity courts. I'm not going to equity court. Now, if you go into a court and there's a contract involved, I was a contractor, I always had contracts, so the contract becomes sort of the statute, the codes, you know, it becomes the law of the case, okay? Certain things in a contract is unlawful and can't be applied. That could be, you know, then it becomes null and void, just like a bad law can become null and void. But the jury would act upon that contract as much as the judge would be. And again, you know, you can, if you have a contract dispute, you can get in and out of the court in one day, you know, which is the way it should go. This shouldn't be going on for a year on end. They do it in the simplest cases. But, you know, you go in and out in one day, and there should be no reason to have to mess around any further. But that's providing that the judge is being honest and maintaining, you know, keeping his oath and isn't playing favorites. And as long as that's not happening, you know, as long as he's doing the right thing, nothing wrong with letting the judge make the decision in that case, in the civil case.
Correct. So if one goes into court and asks the judge or the clerkship court if they're on their oath and to ask to enter those, you know, certifications on the record, if they want to enter that into evidence, say they deny entering their oath of office into evidence on the record, would that be considered treason?
Well, look, I don't ask the judges for their oaths. If I feel that I have to do it, and if it's a lawsuit and any paper I'm doing, I'll write it in there. I accept the oaths of all the officers in this court. Now, if they don't fess up and say, wait, I don't have an oath, I don't have it on file or whatever, you know, well, they just committed fraud if they didn't tell the truth after you made that statement. Leave it alone. It can play later on, maybe.
All right.
You know? Last question, because I got a few other people in the queue yet.
If someone goes to trial and then they do an appeal, supervisory writ for appeal, and then the appellate court comes back and
says, you go to trial and what? Say this again. Appeal?
All right, so one went to trial and done appeals, and the court would come back and say, well, there's two instances. And the first, they would say, well, the district court didn't send us record. They didn't send us anything, any information on your case. And then, you know, the other one just kind of pulled up some statutory stuff and said that we're going to miss the deadline. If they're denying, basically if they're mutilating the document, you know, and concealing them, it's kind of they're just not giving one justice. So how do you kind of, you know, command the court to produce those documents and send them to the appellate court?
Well, that's the big question. Look, you got to keep your own record, and there's numerous ways you could do that. You definitely want to write affidavits every day for that you go into a courtroom, and should have other people coming in as witnesses writing affidavits. You know, if you can record and then you go home and you can then write your affidavit off that, but or have good notes in the courtroom. And, you know, you can also take your notes and refile them with you, your perspective, your perception and understanding of what took place in the courtroom that day. You can file that in the court. This is your understanding of events. I mean, that's another way to keep a record in the court, and you have a copy of that. So, you can get to ask for a recording. They have a audio recording in all courts. They just don't want you to know about it, and you can press towards that, tell them your weight. And of course, there's also, if you're going to get the stenographer's recording, you want to get that as often as possible, and so on. And if you see a discrepancy, then at that point, you can make that point right then and there in the court with a paper and file a paper the next day that there's a discrepancy. This is what actually happened, because I was there, and I swear that that happened. And if you got two or three other people swearing that that's what happened in the court, that's what was said, but the stenographer or the recording has some other information written down that's not true, you can correct it that way too. But if you wait till the end to get all that stuff, you know, there is no correction to be made. You have to be on top of that if you're going to keep a record of the court.
All right. Well, thank you, John. I really appreciate it.
All right. Okay, we'll take our next caller. It is a 954 area code number. What's your first name and your state? And we only got a few minutes left, so we've got to make these short.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. My name is Oleg, and my state is Maryland.
Okay, what's your first name?
Hello, John. Yes, my question is, I'm stuck in an equity court, which is custody court, which is a cause of equity. And I've been battling this for 10 years and deprived of my kids. So lately...
Well, it's not an equity court. You're in a custody battle with what? Your wife
Well, it was ex-girlfriend, and children are grown big. And in the Maryland annotated codes, there are multiple case laws stating that it is a matter of equity. Child custody and child support is a matter of equity. I put a lot of case laws for it.
Yeah, but that may be what they say, and that may be what lawyers write, but that is not the case. If you're in court, it should be really, it's a common law, it's a court of record. It should be a court of record. The people belong in courts of law, which is courts of record, not equity. Equity has to do with constitutional authorities to write legislation for a certain purpose. Now, if this was an issue with a bankruptcy, because we've given Congress the authority to write the law for bankruptcy situations, and you file for bankruptcy, yeah, you're on an equity court because you're participating in that type of a court. But there's very few courts, very few jurisdictions that the people are involved in that would be under equity, unless they're operating in commercial activities that they may fall under an equity process, or if they're working for a federal or state or some other government agency, you fall into the equity side of things while you're operating, if something comes up while you're in your authoritative powers versus your people powers when you're not working and you run into a people thing, you don't need to be dealing with equity. But clearly when it comes to children and families and marriage and all that stuff, they try to play that game, but you really should be in a... First of all, when it comes to dealing with custody, mm-hmm. or dealing with a marriage that isn't working, it shouldn't be in a court of all. It should be under the auspices of a court, but there should be a group of people who clearly are not lawyers, who have some background in counseling, because that's what's really required there. It's counseling the people, working out the situation, and being fair. And look at, you can lay the rules out very simple. Forget about your rights and forget about the woman's right. What about the child's right to a father and a child's right to a mother? Well, there's a 50-50 there at best. At best that the child can get is 50 here and 50 there. And so we got to give that child at least that if it's possible.
But imagine, John, I've made all these statements and all the case laws and Supreme Court case laws about the fathers and the involvement and the constitutionally secured rights, unalienable rights.
Yeah.
I've made all that. and from shared custody eventually, probably a pistol of all these judges. They completely, well, for the past 3 years, it's just one judge. They signed one judge for me. And he's so biased that he completely deprived me from kids.
Yeah,
completely.
It's the worst.
And they're
worst
big,
part.
13 and almost 16. And they already spoke to him. There's this long, we want to see the father and such. So, but that's the case right now. So I'm doing it from a different angle. I claim that it is my property. So, and it is a tort claim that my property has been taken away from me. So, and I'm thinking to move it into a next step. So it's going to be a federal court, right, with the tort claim.
Well, look, at, you know, again, a federal court is only can hear situations that are under the Constitution. So, yeah, your right of due process has been violated, so you can take that into the court for that. If you win that, everything that court done has to be reversed back to its original state. Plus, you can pursue damages at the same time. But again, to get a judge to do that on a federal level, it's like pulling teeth also. Remember, it's an uphill battle. Again, you know, I hate to constantly tell people
but
that.
But on the website that you show that you helped people in the past with a similar situation, with family.
Right. Well, we're doing things now where we're trying to help people and they can move their case, join it with ours because they're in jurisdictions unknown, not getting their due process, and that's mm-hmm. what we're dealing with. We take it into the federal court, yes.
That's exactly what I need to do. And how do I do that?
Well, talk with Jim at intake at nationalliberty.org and get a dialogue going with Jim.
I see. And then figure out the situation and proceed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I got the
point. Let me take the next caller. We only got another. Well, actually, at the end, I'll take one more caller. Okay, thanks.
John, I appreciate this. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thank you. Okay, Scott from, what's that, Georgia?
Yes, hey, John. What kind of helpful knowledge would you give someone that has been told he has an arrest warrant and has been indicted? And all of it's been started over a headlight there now.
What was the last part? What did you say was the last thing you said? What?
What kind of helpful knowledge?
Okay. Well, look, at if there's a warrant out for you and there's an indictment, first of all, I can tell you that the indictment is unlawful and the arrest warrant is unlawful. Maybe there is a reason for that, and it may be valid, but the process they're doing is wrong. But that doesn't change anything because, again, people believe the fiction is truth and reality, and therefore that's what gives it its power and authority. You know, if when the little kid that sees the emperor realizes that he's naked and says the emperor has no clothes and the people finally see that, well, now you can have success. But as long as the people see the emperor with clothes on, you'll never get anywhere. And that's the problem we have. We are our own worst enemies. We are the problem. But the only way to fix that is education. Okay? Education is the only way to fix it.
How would somebody go about, you know, trying to get out of that pickle?
Yeah. Well, it's rough. I don't know. I mean, again, you know, you hate to have to turn yourself in and go to jail and trying to defend yourself from jail. That's a problem. If you know that you can get in and get bail and then work from outside the court, that's better. You know, I don't really have answers for people or for anything other than to try to help them if they got their own abilities to do things. You know, we give them some additional paperwork, forms that we've put together that are useful from a common law perspective. Again, it's an uphill battle, and you have to be able to defend yourself, maintain, control the narrative of the court, keep the other side on the defensive side, and you always be on the offensive, and as long as those three things are working for you, you're progressing forward toward the potential success. If you're seeing the opposite and you're not controlling the narrative, you're not controlling, and you're being on the offensive all the time, I mean the defensive all the time, then obviously you're losing. So
yeah,
I don't have an answer for you there, but once you get in, you can still challenge jurisdiction. Not that they're going to listen, but again, you know, it's an uphill battle, and you have to have some knowledge.
Yeah, they're not listening at all. They're ignoring my mailings and everything. They're railroading me over is what's happening. And I was wondering if you know anybody.
Let me ask you a question: is this a town court or a county court or a state court? What kind of court?
It started in a county court, General Sessions, and I showed up. But I was, you know, denying them jurisdiction. And, you know, they've got a camera going on in there, so I've demanded all my evidence. But they're not listening. They won't give me my evidence because I got the judge saying that he has jurisdiction. But at the end, when they forced me through it all, he said he had jurisdiction. I said, well, you're going to make a judgment on it. Well, I'm going to move it up to a higher court. Well, I didn't show up for the next one, because all they're going to do is, because they threatened me to put me in jail, and all they're doing is railroading me. So I'm trying to stay out of jail and fight it. But
well, talk with Jim. Maybe it's a case we can help you with for a joinder.
Yeah. Well, I've almost done. I think he might be getting ready to do the mailings for me. But that's what I'm trying to get is let them know, hey, there's a lot more of us out here that knows your game, you know, knows your fraud on the court. And
I haven't met a person yet satisfied with the court.
Yeah, no, I
how just they are.
Yeah, yeah, they're real bad. I've been through the fire, so. But I was just wondering if you know anybody, any lawyers or something that. Because I need to get where I can get out of the house, you know, instead of get kidnapped.
Well, Brent is a common law lawyer, and I'm sure you're familiar or heard Brent talking.
I love his point of view.
I don't know how far he might be from you, whether he can go there and again, but he's fighting an uphill battle just like us. But if you have a lawyer, it does make it. If you have a lawyer that can defend some positions, then the court's going to have to accept those positions. And
they just railroad us people over.
Yeah.
But I figured if somebody knew somebody, you know, maybe I could get some kind of help or something, because they have destroyed our
justice system. Totally destroyed it. It's just a total mess. And they've made a mockery out of everything. It's just a horror mess. And it's just amazing, you know. Well, you know, it's amazing that we have all these lawyers that believe this. They have outcome-based socialist education.
They're creating anarchy in the land is what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm ready to claim to my Second Amendment.
Look at these bar attorneys, these bar-taught attorneys. They should not be judges, that's for sure.
Oh, yes, yes. Yep.
Well, all right.
I was just wondering if you knew, you know. But,
yeah, that's the best I can tell, to talk to Jim and see what we can do from that perspective. Or if you can, you get a hold of Brent. And I'm not sure how far he'd be from you, whether he could do anything for you. But,
okay.
You know.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. All right. We still do have a few people in the queue, but we're after midnight. We're going to close down, and Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. Again, we have that paper up there. And everybody should read that paper, get a copy, get it out to other people. And they're an education. All these papers we write is an education. We write it that way so that people could learn, and the footnotes will give you sources and more insight on the meaning of things. But get educated, get into our course, and get involved. All right, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. See you next time, Lord willing. Good night.